The Joe Rogan Experience podcast is brought to you by Onnit.com. But if you've heard the podcast before, you already know that. So I'll spare you most of the nonsense. If you use the code name Rogan, you get 10% off any and all supplements. And the supplements are the best shit available. The best shit we can find. We sell you the stuff that we actually use. I've been a fan of nootropics long before I ever got involved in being a pitch man. But I am a firm believer in healthy diet and nutrients for your body. And I believe that nootropics are beneficial for cognitive function. I take them, and that's why we sell them. Alpha Brain is the best combination of nootropics we know how to put together. If there was a better combination, if there was a better way to do it, we would do that way. That's just what we do. The whole idea, but that sounded so douchey. That's just what we do. I sound like a girl who's like talking about her team. We win. That's just what we do. I apologize for that. Look, I ad-lib these fucking things, and sometimes I don't even know what I'm saying. It comes out of my mouth, and I'm like, really, dude? Yeah, really, dude. If I had a chance to edit this, it'd be way better, but I don't. All the other shit that we sell, whether it's Hemp Force, we're selling you the best quality hemp protein that is available. It is sweetened with natural sweeteners. It's called stevia. There's like 1 gram of sugar in a serving. It's completely negligible. And the beneficial nutrients that you get from it are fantastic. It's got raw cocoa in it, which is an excellent antioxidant. It also has maca in it, which is a testosterone booster. It's a very healthy root. So the hemp protein powder that we sell is the highest quality, highest protein content available. So it's all substantial nutrition, and it tastes fucking great. And we got kettlebells and battle ropes. And go get yourself some grass-fed beef, son. Get your shit together, all right? Get your shit together. Use the code name Rogan. Save 10% off any and all supplements. We are also brought to you by DeskSquad.tv. DeskSquad.tv is where you ever see those shirts that everybody, where do you get those DeskSquad shirts that people wear at our shows? Those are all available at DeskSquad.tv. And they are the creation of Brian Redband. They are 100% his. He doesn't just, you're not just buying a shirt from a guy who like commissioned an artist. Like if you buy any of my higher primate shirts, I pay a dude to draw those things. Like, Brian actually makes these cats. You know, love them or hate them, they're trippy as fuck. And the new one, the new cat is my favorite cat for sure. We got to do something with that dude.
Oh, wait till you see the newer one that I'm working on right now.
I'm nervous because this one is, I'm nervous. Just so fucked
up. How nervous do you think? I'm nervous. It's hard to fucking do this. Now I'm like, I got to make it better than the last one.
They're so weird. You know, the strapped up with dynamite and fucking crazy looks at his last. Like, what is the message here? Like, what the fuck is the message here?
Can I also promote that we have a great podcast with Tom Green and Steve-O at DeathSquad.tv right now that we just put as Kat Von D and Deadmau5 on.
Oh, that's okay. This is cool. The ones that you've been doing on Mondays.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of great podcasts at DeathSquad on iTunes. We got Kevin Pereira. If you've ever seen Attack of the Show, Kevin Pereira was the host for the longest time, and now he has one of the best podcasts on the internet.
Yeah.
It's fucking awesome. The dude is just, he's so smart, and he's so cool, and he's just so in the right groove all the time. Yeah, I love talking to that guy, and I love his podcast, and it's called Pointless, and you can catch that on iTunes. And it's all, all this shit is free. Always free. It'll keep it free. Except my comedy special, bitch. You gotta pay for that. It's only $5, though. You know, when Louis C.K. set out to do it, I think if you have to look at, like, the best comics in the country right now, I'd say Louis C.K. is, like, right at the very top of the heap. So when Louis C.K. puts a comedy special out and it's $5, you can't make your $6. You know, you got to do $5 too, stupid. You know, or $4. Well, how about you be a little humble? Your shit's worth about $3.50, you know? But the ability to do that that Louis exposed was huge. I mean, it was just an amazing new thing. Like, a light went off in my head when I saw it. I was like, oh, my God, that's how I'm doing everything from now on. It's just like I wish I'd thought of it myself, but I'm so glad he did. And it's available DRM-free on JoeRogan.net. It's only $5. You can get it. You can use PayPal and Amazon. And I paid for the whole thing. I paid to get it produced and filmed and edited.
And you can also gift it. Like, I sent one to my dad. He just got an iPad and Apple TV, so now he's all Appling it out. So I send him it, and it goes to his email. He just clicks on it and downloads it, and then he can just, you know, stream it right to his TV. It's great.
I always have that uncomfortable moment when I have to talk to a dude after he's seen my act for the first time, especially like an older guy. Or...
He's already seen you.
Oh, really?
Remember, he saw you like 7 years ago when we were there the Men of Comedy.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, we did it. That's right. Yeah, all right. We'll start this podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Andrew Dice Clay is here, bitches. Respect. Respect.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan podcast by night, all day.
New Year's Eve, you dirty fucks. It's going down. Andrew motherfucking Dice Clay. Where it will be? How can they see it?
Showtime. 10
Showtime.
P.m.
10 p.m.
On Showtime.
On Showtime. Is this something you've already filmed? It's not going to be
This already. Yeah.
You say you were very happy with it.
Really happy with it. But I really stayed on it from beginning to end. I had a concept, you know, that I wanted to do, as far as I'm concerned, the most, like an ultimate rock and roll stand-up show to really bring excitement, you know, because like you know, you're very animated on stage. You know, you're all over the place. You move. You know, you can see there's life in you. You know, and that's like the one thing that always bothered me about comedians, that they don't know too much about performance art. Especially, you know, when the cameras are rolling. Everybody thinks they're great, and then the cameras turn on, and they stand like a fucking mummy. Yeah. You know, so I really wanted to give a real edgy rock and roll special. And you know, as you've met before, my sons, you know, L.A. Rocks opens the show. Eleanor Kerrigan, you know, who opens my shows, is in the special, which you never even see an opening act in a one-hour special. And it's just from the second it starts to the second it ends, it's just exciting and it's fucking funny. You know, and that's what I wanted to deliver. I wanted to give people something that... You know, especially, you know, the way the world is today, the whole political correctness fucking shit, you know, and I made sure there is nothing politically correct about this special, you know, because, you know, when comics are being put on trial for telling, you know, a gay joke or a black joke, and, you know, now the whole world, what do you think, you know, when TMZ stop and you go, what do you think of, you know, Tosh, you know, Daniel Tosh saying this joke. I go, it's a fucking joke. Isn't that the point? Aren't we allowed to comment on what goes on socially, you know, in the world?
And since when is someone joking and being serious at the same time? Since when is that a real statement? When someone's saying something that's obviously ridiculous, they don't really mean that. You're so stupid, you can't interpret that. You can't, you know, I mean, why are we
running for office with comedians?
And the idea is that, you know, when someone says something offensive that's a joke, the idea is that somehow it's the exact same thing as saying something offensive about a person, whether it's a racist thing or a gay thing, for being cruel.
We're not having an argument and calling somebody a name.
No, we're saying it for an effect.
That's right.
And it's an art form.
Yeah, and people, you know, this is, you know, a time where people need to really laugh. You know, I really wanted the New Year's Eve spot because I also know, you know, especially because that hurricane happened on the East Coast. And I know a lot of people don't go out. It's house parties.
Right.
And I just want their stomachs to fucking hurt from the things I'm saying on that stage.
But listen, I saw you in Vegas. Me and Norton and
Red Band was
Anthony.
With you.
Yeah, Red Band came. Sam from Opie and Anthony show. And we had the fucking best time. Because that's like, it's a rare treat for me to be able to go and just sit down and be an audience member.
And enjoy it.
Yes, at a great show.
And no, you're seeing somebody that won't hold back no matter where. You know, the first time I even did Vegas years ago... For the Comedy Store, when the Comedy Store was at the Dunes, I got fired the second night, you know, for language, you know, and, you know.
Is this you? Is this the new special?
Yeah, this is the
I
new special.
I love it.
Yeah, I wanted, you know, I didn't wear anything too intense as far as an outfit. I didn't want to go with the Elvis-y jackets, you know. I wanted it very street. I wanted the stage to look street, you know.
Yeah, the show you put on in Vegas was fucking awesome. I really enjoyed
the
shit out of it.
Well, that's why I prepared for this. You know, I prepared for it in Vegas and around the country, but I did, you know, this past year I did 28 weeks in Vegas. You know, I just wanted it tight because as good as you think you might be when the cameras are rolling, like I said, you are going to fuck up a little. You know, yeah. You know, like I was doing this one bit where I left out a whole chunk of the bit because I was so into, like, performing for the crowd that after the show was over, you know, the producers were like, you know, my wife even, she goes, you left out this, this, and this. You know, but that was the warm-up show.
Right, right, right.
You know, and then the second show I came out to just annihilate the crowd, and the crowd was, you know, it was bedlam. It right. was in, as insane as I was. You know, it was very reminiscent of my first special as far as the audience reaction.
The energy.
Yeah, we did it in Chicago. I mean, the band kicked ass.
Do you feel like you're having like a resurgence?
It's a complete resurgence. You know, I mean, just by the response of the people, you know, years ago, you know, when I would say certain things with women, you know, it was the, you know, that's wrong to say, you know. And today when I tell them what piglets they've become through the years, now they got their fist pumping in the air like, yeah, dice, dice.
It's a different era, right? People are more accepting of fucked up shit now because of the internet.
But also people have changed because a lot of what I talk about is sexual, you know, and women have changed. They're the ones that wrote the material, you know, that, you know, in this day and age, you know, I had a call from a friend of mine that was with a girl, went out with her, thought she was a sweet girl. And, you know, they wound up just doing everything imaginable to each other. And he tells me, so I call her the next day, you know, to see how she's doing, you know, letting her know, like, it's not forgotten, like, I want to see you. And she goes, I'll call you right back. And she never even called me again, he said. He goes, I was the one-night stand. But that's how things have changed, that they've become so aggressive, you know, that you can't go by the face. You can't go by, oh, she's got that girl-next-door look, you know, and the next thing you know, she's a contortionist for you, you know, wrapping her feet around the back of her neck while you bang her. You know what I mean? That's what it is today.
That didn't exist before?
Well, you know what? I didn't have one like that. You know what I mean? You know, I haven't hit the contortionist thing. But, you know, I always thought a woman in the bedroom or, you know, in a subway, wherever you might be banging her at the time, you know, a dressing room, whatever, a cab, a car, whatever, you know, an alley, you know, should be the kind of woman she wants to be. Like, that she doesn't have to hold back. Because I always felt like a lot of relationships, you know, like I'm married now for the third time, and I feel a lot of relationships start, you know, splitting apart because people aren't honest at the beginning about what they like, how they like to be. You know, years ago, a woman wouldn't let you know all these little things that might, you know, push her buttons, and sooner or later, she's doing it with some other guy because she's now afraid to tell you what she's about. And, you know, I would always let a woman know, just be the pig that you are, if I had to say it comedically. You know what I mean? Be what you want to be. I don't judge that way.
Yeah, I think slowly but surely everyone's going to just be what they want to be. Because
but when you're in a relationship and you don't start out that way, you know, that's where the problems could arise.
Yeah,
you know?
Also people grow in different directions. You know, that happens too. One person will get freakier, the other person wants to settle down more.
Well, you know what? I always say to a guy that's with a woman for a bunch of years in the audience, I go, what, are you going to leave her just to fall in hate all over again? You know what I mean? Because it always starts out nice. You know what I mean? And then a couple of years later, it's that fucking money-grubbing whore all the way to plaintiff.
Yeah, is it possible to break that chain? How do you break that chain?
Well, you know, we're doing good. You know, me and my wife are doing good.
Yeah, she seems happy. She's always smiling. You're always smiling when you're with her?
Yeah, she makes me happy. We make each other happy.
Is it just a matter of getting the right combination, finding the right two humans?
You know what it is? You really do have to search that out. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and make like we never had an argument. I mean, she's Latin, you know.
Right.
You know, I mean, it gets crazy sometimes, but we always know that we're tight. That's what keeps you together. I mean, an argument happens with anybody. But you got to know that, you know, you got all these other things in the relationship that keep you together.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, if you just...
But that's what I talk, you know, when I'm on stage, it's a different side of me. It's, you know, it's, you know, an animal unleashed that when I'm on a stage, I could just have the freedom to say things the way I see it and paint these crazy, almost like pornographic comedic cartoons for people. And they laugh because they know they're doing it. You know what I mean? They know, you know, when you see a couple and you do, you know, we're similar in that thing. You say what you feel on stage. And whenever you see those couples that look at each other and laugh, those are the couples that go, how does he know? How does he know what an animal I am? You know what I mean? How does he know this? You know, but that's research. You know, you go through life and you learn different things.
Research.
Yeah, it's got to be research.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything is research, really.
I was with a contortionist recently, and I thought it would be amazing. I mean, I always pictured it would be amazing, but she's always just really sore, and she always has a fucked up chin because her chin's always on the floor and shit. Like,
really?
Yeah, and I'm a chin guy. Like, you have to have a – I don't like weak chins where it's just like – you know, and then when it's a nice chin, but it's all, like, scratched up and rashy.
Damn, like they use the bottom of their chin a lot?
They're always on their chins.
Yeah, that's interesting to me. Yeah. You know, I haven't hit that yet.
Wow.
We do any chin work? No. You know, there's no chin work in our sex. What do you mean with the chin?
Because, like, when they do contortionist stuff.
Don't lie to me,
no,
Red this,
Band. No, there are. There are really are photos.
I'm in a good
people.
Mood. We're coming into the new year. If you're just fucking around with me, I'm going to get angry.
100%. Like, a lot of times.
Pull a photo up, bro. Pull a photo for him.
Photo of the chins?
Yeah.
Someone doing that on their chin.
Oh, okay.
How would you even have that here?
I better not say where she works, but she would always be in a bent position where her face is always on the ground,
and her feet go all the way over the back of her head,
her like this, you know. So she's like sitting there like that. So whenever she's doing contortion, she's always on her chin. Here, I'll show you some photos if you look at that TV right there. Like,
let's see this now.
You know, see, like,
what is she in?
See that girl?
See, like this right here, like this kind of stuff where she has her chin. Right here, like this.
Oh, this
kind of
is
stuff.
A girl that you know.
No, this is not her. This girl's 7, but.
What's that? Yeah, I got bad eyes, so, you know.
No, he's just.
I can't
just
be
showing
at a 7-year-old. See, what are you doing?
No. This is a woman. This is a woman.
Oh, okay.
This is a woman.
All right. See that woman's legs? See, look what she's doing?
See how her chin's on the ground? Well, you never think about it, but contortionists always have their
faces
on the ground.
Well, you'll think about it if you're stepping on her head and you're in there, you know what I mean? That's no good.
So that is a weird position to put your body.
Yeah.
You know, that's a weird. That's not a position I could get into, I don't think.
And then in sex, you just don't think about it. Like yeah, their legs bend really far back when you're putting them up above your legs, but you're not going like, all right, now, can you bend this backwards? I just want to make it a meatball or something.
Well, you mean you don't do stretching exercises with your chick before you begin?
No, I don't. It's usually...
See, that's...
It's probably better than a chick with a hamstring pull, though.
Yeah.
It's like, if it was the opposite. Like, ow, don't pull my leg. Ow! Right.
It's just funny. You'd be better off with the contortions up there. That's funny to me.
Oh, the
yeah. See, he looks like a nice guy, right?
He looks like a nice guy.
No, but I'm saying he looks like a regular nice guy. But look what he's into.
Well, he just gave it a shot. In his defense, he didn't necessarily say he was into it.
Oh no,
you're not into it.
No, I'm not into it.
You got a girlfriend right now?
Sure. Yeah, a couple. No.
Yes. Nothing steady.
Yeah. No, I have. Yeah, I have a steady and a two.
What does that even mean?
It means he's retarded. If you didn't know that by now. What you just went, this is called a web. You got caught in the spider web. The spider web of retardation. And it sticks to you.
I'm dating.
And you're like, oh my God, I'm in this conversation and I can't get out. What the fuck did I do? Why did I engage him? And you're trying to pull yourself free.
Yeah,
but
no, but I like
struggle.
Him. But now, you know, we're into something. You know, I don't know what's going on.
And you don't know why you're invested in this.
You know, but what happened?
I'm just dating. That's, I guess, the easiest way to say it.
Dating?
Yeah.
Guys shouldn't say dating.
He's really trying to, you know.
And I like you. You know, I'm not starting with you. But, you know, I'm dating now.
Yeah.
That's what a girl says after she broke up with a guy after 6 months. Well, I'm starting to date.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying not to jump right into a relationship.
You know, you're on a very cool podcast here. You can't use expressions like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't do that, man.
You know, and I like you. We're friends.
What am I supposed to say?
You know. You know, I'm banging a few of them out right now.
I'm not just committed.
Just to fit the show, you know what I mean?
I'm not completely committed over here.
You know, I throw a load this way, you know. I splooged all over this one before I came to work just for a goof. You know what I mean? Things like that.
Yeah,
it fits
that.
The show.
Yeah, Brian, you got to realize you're never going to go back to being...
You know, this is a podcast. That's the beauty of this. You can say what you want.
I know.
Yeah, you're never going to go back to being an accountant again. This will never haunt you.
Was he an accountant?
No.
Is that...
He used to sell computers.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's a very good guy.
But, you know, he's got to hit it up a little.
He's a mess. Is he? Right? He's a mess.
Well, you're with him a lot, so
he's a great guy. But a mess in
no doubt that he's a great guy. I'm just
mess in a good way. Like, what's going on?
I mean, out of one side of his mouth, he's saying I'm dating.
All right, I'm pink socking Asians. No, but, making them pee a little.
All right, but what I'm saying is, you know, out of one side of your mouth, you're talking about dating, and on the other side, you're showing girls, you know, twisting themselves into pretzels.
But that wasn't really like a sexual thing.
No, no, but it can be.
Yes,
can is be. What he's saying. That's what he's saying.
What the fuck happened?
Brian, you just retarded yourself out. Now you're caught in your own web. Your own web has wrapped you up.
All right, we'll leave him alone. We'll leave him alone.
He's in his defense. He has a very unusual dating situation. Seems to be working out.
And he doesn't want to talk about it on the air. I get
exactly.
that.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you want to talk about then?
What are you talking about?
We talk about
comedy.
We want
to talk about you.
We are. But I try not to be so, like, crazy with myself. I really try to stay, like, grounded in what I do, because it does feel a little crazy right now with what's going on, like you said, about a resurgence.
Yeah.
And
well, you seem real excited about comedy again, too. Like, you
well,
know,
you know what it is? I've watched a lot of the specials, and when I spoke to Showtime about this, you know, I had a couple rules because, you know, I even told my director, Scott Montoya, I said, look, you know, you're going to go through something now. This isn't going to be like the other specials you've done. You're going to, you know, your hair's going to change color because of this. You know, you're going to go through it with me now. You're going to be a different man when you come through this. And what was funny is he when we were going to do the special, he spoke to Joe Diaz, you know, and he goes, you know, he told me, you know, he goes to Diaz, he goes, you know, I'm thinking of doing a special with Dice. What do you think? And he goes, well, I think he's great, but you're going to go through it. You know, he's crazy when it comes to these things. And I am, because all the way from the performance to the editing, I want it to be perfect. I want people like in a capsule, because I really don't want to do any more specials. Like, I'm going to do The Road now. I'm just finishing up, you know, a deal with the Hard Rock in Vegas, a long-term deal. And, you know, I want to do what I do on The Road now.
What are you going to do at the Hard Rock? Same thing that you were doing at the Riv?
Yeah.
Doing monthly shows?
Yeah, I'm going to do like 2 weeks at a clip and go into, what's the name? Vinyl. It's a rock club.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, I base my act on rock and roll, so I like a certain setting. You know, it's not that big of a room. You know,
I was just there. I was just in Vegas 2 weeks ago. It's great. The new Hard Rock is great.
Well, I mean, I just love it. Updates. You know, with what I do in that hotel, it really fits.
Yeah.
And, you know, Vegas is somewhere I like to be a lot. So, you know, on the road, you know what it is. You go into a couple thousand seats. It's one time a year. But Vegas, I like doing like 20 weeks, 24 weeks a year. And, you know, me and my wife just go nuts there. We have a great time. And, you know, it's like a home away from home.
Right. Why did you choose Vegas to work out your shows? Why did you decide to do it that way and not do it in L.A.?
Well, I was doing clubs around the country, you know, so I did that. You know, I did, you know, like the Governors, all those clubs.
Right.
You know, but Vegas was like a steady thing. It almost became like my comedy store. I was at the Las Vegas Hilton for a while working on it, and then we went to the Riv before the Hilton, and then we went back to the Riv because I was never into the room at the Hilton to start with, but, you know, I have investors in the show, and, you know, we tried it. But the Riv was a great room to really just work it out, do as long a set as I want, and really just make everything tight and develop the material with an audience that's coming to see me. So when you have the people that are paying to come see you, you know if the material's good because that's the fans now. Yeah. When you go on places like the Comedy Store, you're going to get those people that, you know, look at you and go, what did he just say? I want to leave now.
Right.
You know, and I didn't want to deal with that. I want the real audiences.
I thought that was a brilliant idea to do it at the Riv for that reason, that you would get all your people there, but also because the place has so much fucking history.
Well, yeah.
Such a crazy hotel.
Think of the people that perform there from Sinatra to Sammy Davis to, you know, comics like Milton Berle and, you know, Jack Benny.
Yeah.
You know, who personally I wasn't ever even fucking into because, like I say, I was never that much into stand-ups. But, you know, when you're on a stage that, you know, Sinatra was on, I did a lot of rooms like that in Vegas. I did, before they knocked, what was The Stardust. I did the Stardust for a few years.
Wow.
And that was one of the best stages because that stage, you know, you had the stage that you're on like this, and then it had, what's it called, like a runway that went right through the entire audience. Mm-hmm. And they don't build stages like that anymore. Wow. So I was lucky enough to play some of those. Bally's Hotel I did for 13 years.
Isn't it crazy with those old Vegas hotels that when they're done with them, they explode them?
It's crazy because, you know, I think, you know, people, you know, I know a lot what goes on in Vegas. And, like, these people that just bought the Sahara want to make it, like, more of a boutique hotel again. You know, for high rollers, not a lot of kids, you know, not 1,000 floors up. You know, a smaller place where people really feel that old-school Vegas feel.
Right.
And I also think Vegas is really becoming a place for comedy. Not just comedy, for live entertainment. Because of recession, you know, when people come to Vegas, if they're going to go to a show, they want to see somebody familiar to them.
Right.
You know, so that's why a lot of comics are moving there. You know, and that's why a lot of, you know, you see people like Cher performing there. Mm-hmm. I just saw Guns N' Roses there. You know, it's that type of place now. They want to see people that they're fans of. They don't want to see just, you know, a bunch of midgets on bungee cords.
Right.
Jumping around to the Beatles music, you know.
You could probably do like a weekly show in Vegas and never have to travel anywhere and just make people travel
to
you.
Yeah, but I want a tour. I want a tour. You know, I owe it to myself. I owe it to the fans that, you know, have been with me all these years. I'm doing this a long time. So I really want to do that big tour again. And I don't know how you know, the kind of rooms I'll do yet, but I mean, just on things that are on sale already, they're going through the roof, you know, and the special has an ad, but people know it's coming. And, you know, ever since I did Entourage, I have this whole new audience, and I'll always get that. Where can I see a comedy special? You're doing a comedy special. So I really prepared for it. I really took it serious. You know, when I see guys preparing for specials, but just fucking around on stage, that bothers me. I'm like, they all want to be superstars. They all want to fill, you know, the Staples Center, but nobody's putting in the work to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and I know you're a hard worker. That's why I feel free to tell you this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I know you give everything you got on stage. I mean, you know, it's funny. When I was coming up, you weren't around, right? So, you know, you had myself. You had Sam Kennison, who was screaming his head off. And then one night I walk into the store, and I'm like, I'm seeing, you know, just style-wise, almost a blend of Kennison and me coming through you, but even more intense when you would scream it. That's why I loved them. I'm going, who the fuck is this? That the night I came in, you were about, you know, you were deciding in your head, I could tell, if you wanted to just smash this guy's skull in. And I'm going, now that's funny. You know what I mean? Because nobody came along since, you know, like I did an album called The Day the Laughter Died because Rick Rubin, who produced 5 of my albums, you know, he did like, you know, he was the one that brought rap to the scene. He's the one that brought the Black Crows and, you know, bands like that. I mean, he produced, you know, Rolling Stone albums, you know, and he'd say to me, you know, in the early 90s, he'd go, you're the end of comedy. There's nowhere to go after this, you know. And then here's this maniac on stage. I mean, I came in the middle of your act, so I had to, like, watch to see where you were, you know, because you were just, you know, this has got to be 15 years ago, maybe right. Even more. And, you know, so you were so young and just your face was beet red, you know, and I'm going, I know this guy. I didn't know your name because I just came walking in from the front right. Door. I go, he's going to kill this guy in the third row. And I don't know what over. It's a comedy show, but that's the shit that makes me laugh. And then one night, Eleanor, this is not even that long ago, I was destroying somebody in the original room at the Comedy Store. And that's when you came up with, I love Dice Mean. And she told it to me. I go, does he really? She goes, he just loves you, and he loves when you get angry. Because he knows you're really getting angry.
It was one of my favorite things at the Comedy Store to be in the back. We'd be in the back talking, and someone would yell out in the hallway, Dice's got a heckler. It's like he had a fish on. You know, it was like, we got a tuna. You know, and we would all run in the back and just watch you just eviscerate people. When you would get really mean with people, look at you.
Because because I would really see, I'm not fake on stage, and I'm emotional. So if I'm doing like a great bit that I know is great, and in the middle of it, you know, I hear a guy yelling out, "Little Bo Peep," yeah. I'm gonna get angry at that person.
Yes,
you know, and you know, it's not even about heckling that person. It's about knowing I've mentally hurt him for years to come.
But like, it was like still with great timing and comedy skill. Well, yeah, it was still very funny.
Of course, you got to stay with it. But it's like you really want to hurt the person mentally.
You want to crush
him. You know
what
I mean? I mean, now it's at the level where we throw people out.
Yeah.
You know, which, you know, first I'll have the heckle fight.
Well, you did that in Vegas. You threw a guy out, the guy in the front row. Well, like 2 minutes into the show, the guy was so drunk he couldn't even communicate with you. You're like, this is not going to work.
Yeah, and I can't deal with that. It's like, why that drunk? Yeah. I had a guy, I was at Governor's a few months ago. Do you remember this, Valerie, with the blind guy? Yeah, okay. So this guy is just drunk, and he's wearing dark sunglasses. He's looking like a dice clone, you know. That guy's got to be, you know, 50, you know, or in his 40s, whatever. So I'm going back and forth with him a little bit. You know, I figure I'll always give a person a chance.
Right.
But the guy, now I get back into the act, and he starts in some more. So, you know, you got pretty tough bounces there, you know. And I go, do me a favor, get rid of this fucking asshole of a human being. You know what I mean? Just throw him the fuck out. So now after the show, Don Jameson was opening for me that night, and he would sell his T-shirts at the front of the club, you know. So he comes to the dressing room, and he goes, you just missed the greatest thing I ever saw in comedy. And I go, why? What happened? He goes, you know the guy you threw out? It took, number one, 4 bounces. He had, like, retarded strength. He goes, but he was blind, you know, and he was swinging his stick at them. He ran. He tried to run, and he smashed right into a wall. And he turned around, and he was fighting these guys, and he was winning, you know, going, he's coming back in the room. He's going to kick Dice's ass. I mean, that's what a comedy show is today. Who's going to kick somebody's ass? And I'm going, how the fuck did I know he's blind? You know what I mean? The guy, you know, I've had guys come to my show wearing the glasses and the fingerless gloves. How am I going to know the guy's blind? You know, right. And they're dragging him out of the room. He was starting to fight them on the way out of the room, you know, which is entertaining to me. You know, this way I get to laugh a little. You know what I mean? You know, why should the audience always be the one to have a good laugh? Who's going to make me fucking laugh? You know, so when Don told me the story of the blind guy, I really was laughing. It was very enjoyable. But the other side of me was, I wouldn't have thrown the guy out if I knew he was blind. You know,
right?
How do you do that? It's like, you know, kicking a cripple out in that wheelchair.
So was he heckling?
He was just, but it was drunk and it was... You know, it wasn't coherent stuff, and I'm going, okay, asshole face, you know, which is one of my newest, like, heckle lines where, you know, if a guy's a real asshole, I'll tag him with that name, and I'll keep going, asshole face. And then I start getting angry, and I go, I'm not saying you're an asshole. I go, I know you've been called that 1,000 times in your life because of the kind of person you are. What I'm saying to you is I think you have a face that resembles a fucking asshole. And that's what I truly think of you. You know?
That's some shit that you wake up in the middle of the night when you go to take a leak.
I'll tell you what happens mentally when you text.
Dice really say that about me, man?
No, this is what happens with that. See, let's say it's a guy in Vegas with his friends. Hey, asshole face, you know.
Right.
So those friends that are with him now, these buddies of 20 years, you know, that night they're going, come on, asshole face, let's go have a drink. And it's funny the next day even, maybe even a week later. But 3 years later when they're calling your house and the kids are picking up the phone, they're going, yeah, put asshole face on the phone. That's when the guy's going, why did I ever say a fucking word at that show? Because now forever he's asshole face.
That's a multi-tiered solution. I like how you played that out.
But I really think about that stuff. I go, what would hurt in the long run?
Right. That's like some humbling chess shit, right?
Yeah, like if you call... I've heard you call people assholes herpes on stage.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hey, you're a fucking asshole.
Right.
They don't even hear it. because right. they've been called, but to asshole tag face. Them and let them know they have a face that resembles an asshole. Mm.
Even if they don't, just give them that doubt.
Well, no, you know, normally the ones I pick out have it. Yeah, you know what I mean? I really look for a guy that has, I don't want to give a guy a name that doesn't fit him.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So he sort of has to have a face that resembles.
That's heckler herpes is what that's called.
Yeah, it just keeps coming back to fucking haunt you. Because that's the fan. I don't. That was another time, you know. It's Max was with me, and this guy was fucking with Eleanor on stage, and his girlfriend, I think, or his wife. So I come on stage, and the minute he opened his mouth, I'm like, throw this motherfucker out. Oh no, I wasn't on stage, and what happened was I start yelling at the promoters of the show. I go, get that fucking guy out of the room. If he's bad with her, he's not even going to let me get started. But it wasn't good enough for me that they threw him out. I come out the back door. I'm going to fight the guy. You know,
like while the show's going on?
Well, Eleanor's still on stage, you know, so I figured there's a little time, you know. And my wife was yelling.
Is that your phone?
Is it my phone? What the fuck with these things? I don't know how they work.
I think you, unfortunately, I think you've also told that story
before. It's Happy Face.
Oh, it's Happy Face?
Yeah, yeah. And wait, let me check this.
Who's Happy Face?
He's with me for like 25 years already.
Oh.
He does security for me. He's into what you're into, you know, with the fight. He's got, martial arts schools on the East Coast.
And his name's Happy Face?
Well, his name's Mike Melandra, you know, but it's Happy Face.
Everybody calls him Happy Face?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, because he'll always, like, try to smile at a guy when he's throwing him out. And, he's a pretty deadly guy. And that's what I love about him being Happy Face. I mean,
that's a great name.
Well, he got his job with me. You know how he got
love that name. Happy Face is a great fucking name.
And there's
name.
A Happy West also.
Happy West is not as good. Happy West got fucked. Happy Face, it came first.
Well, know, Happy man. Face is with me like 25 years in the way. He got his job. Was I would work out in a gym, in a Gold's Gym in Jersey. And we would just start talking, and, you know, then we would work out a little together. And he's Happy Face is about 5'7", you know, but he's not that big, you know. But he would talk about his martial arts school, how his father taught him. They both had the school, you know, and he, like a father, like son, he followed in his footsteps. So he's standing between the two owners of the gym, which were animals. These guys were like, you know, the type that benched 350, 100 times. You know, they were big guys. So I said, Happy Face. I go, you know, with my shows, I don't like, you know, we were talking about him like working for me because I had Club Soda Kenny, who's like 6'5", mm-hmm. big, you know. And I said, so I looked at Happy Face like he's the sniper. You know, they'd never see him coming. I go, but we don't like to hurt anybody. I go, so what I'm going to do, I'm going to try to get past you, and you got to stop me without hurting me. And this guy put me down. My ass didn't even touch the ground. That's how fast he moved. But at first he's going, I don't want to touch you. He goes, I came to the Meadowlands to see you. You know, he goes, I can't. You know, I go, well, that's the aim. You can't hurt me. That's it. And he did this move, this move on me that just put
me
right
down. See,
the
problem is he could always hurt you. If you're resisting, he could hurt you. You get hurt just scrambling.
That's right. But he put me down, and that night he was working for me.
Yeah?
And that was the beginning of Happy Face.
That's a nice name. I like it.
Yeah, and I love his temper when he gets mad. It's a lot of fun to make him get angry.
You know, it's funny talking about, like...
Because he didn't like the name Mike the Murderer, so that's why it went to Happy Face. Well, yeah, he starts screaming about that. Don't call me that. You know, it's a touchy situation, you know. You know what I'm going? It's just a name. He goes, but don't call me that, you know.
Yeah, people don't want to be called murderers.
No, but he's Happy Face for 25 years. So he's happy about that's why he's calling me.
The Comedy Store was always the worst place in the world for heckling because there was no crowd control whatsoever.
Nothing.
You would think, like, when I lived in Boston and we were at Stitches, Stitches is when that's where I did my first open mic, and I had been really inspired by you, really inspired by Kinnison and a few other guys, and I was really like looking forward to doing some, you know, trying to do some stand up comedy. And you think back then, like what the face of comedy was like, and what it's like now.
Yeah, see, it's all like blank. to me right now. And I'm not pissing on it, but I don't find, you know, I'll flip around the channels, just see if somebody's on, start watching for a few minutes. But like I say, these guys don't put a lot into their, there's nobody developing a persona. You know, and those are the kind, you might not realize it, but you have a persona. You know what I mean? People come to see Joe Rogan, they know what they're getting. You know, but there aren't too many guys. It's almost like white bread. You know, there's no persona up there. So even if the material's decent, you know, a lot of material's been done. A lot of guys cover the same subjects. I'd rather see a guy that's more entertaining that I could go, do you fucking believe what he's doing up there?
Right.
That's the kind of act I like to see.
When we were in Boston and we were starting out and we were like looking at the face of comedy, the Comedy Store was always Mecca. That was always like that fucking place where you'd make the pilgrimage and everybody'd go see the stage where you performed, Kinison performed, Richard Pryor and Letterman.
Everybody.
But when I got there and... When I got there, like, I forget who was on stage. It was some road hack. The place was half full, and some guy's yelling out shit in the back of the room, and no one's kicking him out.
Nobody.
And this was like, my first experience at the
comic store.
Because
the bodyguards are there. The doormen are comics.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to get into it.
Only Harris Pete. Harris Pete would get down. Pete would get down. He would throw dudes out.
I once saw Tony Danza knock him out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you know how condescending Harris could
yes.
be. You know,
Tony Danza was
and
a
Tony
very
Danza
good boxer.
And Tony Danza just wanted to come in, you know, nice as could be.
Yeah.
You know, Tony, I don't know if you know him, but he's just this friendly guy.
Right, yeah.
That could kick ass, you know. And Harris gave him a hard time, and he put his hands on him.
Uh-oh.
You know, like, you can't just walk in. And he just gave him one shot, and he went flying down the stairs.
Wow.
Really funny.
Poor
really
Harris.
Enjoyable.
Harris is such an angry guy. For whatever reason, he's such an angry guy. It took me years to get even the tiniest compliment from that guy.
Yeah, that's it's a name
always,
I haven't thought
I
of.
Negative. There.
Yeah, he just like left the world. He like just got on his motorcycle.
But I do have to say, when the guy gave you props, it meant something. You know,
yeah. For some reason, it did.
Yeah,
like
it
you
meant
go,
something.
But why?
He held it back. Well, it would like him to be a little bit more fair with them. You know, with his
no,
props.
But I'm saying what? You know, it's like getting a compliment from him was like getting one from Mitzi for some reason.
Yeah, it was.
But you know what it is? Because he was always there and he saw everybody perform.
That's true too.
You know,
he knew whether or not to be impressed with you or whether or not you were just bullshitting the crowd. But he was also just negative.
But also the Comedy Store. Why I think you know somebody like you would like it and myself. That was the bad boy comedy club.
Yeah.
It still is.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you say, it's a free-for-all. You go over to the Improv, which is a great club, but it's everything is run. Like, at the Comedy Store, nobody even knows who's running things
it's
anymore.
It's madness. And it was more madness then than it is now.
It really was.
I think it's probably way better managed now than it was back in the early days. But, man.
It was insane.
When I came along, you know, it was 94. That's when I first started performing there. And I was blown away. But it was like the place was like crackling. It's like the magic of all those sets
and
was like in the walls.
And with the store, you ever notice you could go there some nights, you know, those Sunday, Monday nights, and it's as fun as could be and crazy. And then there are certain nights when you come there like that, and just the vibe is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Just the wrong combination of people.
Yeah.
Just like that you go, you know what, I'm getting out of here. It's just that bad fucking vibe. And then just other nights, just insane great.
Yeah, it's an amazing club, you know, just the history.
Yeah, I still love it. I still love going there. I still love going on the stage.
Yeah, I can't go back because of the falling out that I had with them.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Along the Mencia issue. You didn't know about that?
Oh, but you're not allowed back because of that?
I never went back. I never would go back. When they banned me for that, I'm like, you guys are out of your fucking mind.
Yeah, but
like,
if you weren't banned, then you wouldn't be a Comedy Store.
I got banned before that. Mitzi banned me once for my J. Howard Marshall joke. I had this joke about the old dude that fucked Anna Nicole Smith.
Uh-huh.
And it was one of my favorite jokes. It was a great
joke.
She hated it. It was just about, you know, that everyone was saying, oh, it's such a it's so sad to watch this poor old man, you know, and like he's getting robbed, and this woman's just here for his money. And I'm like, don't you think he knows? The guy was 90 years old. He made $1 billion from scratch. You know, chances are he's a tad crafty. Yeah. Like, how do you want him to die? And then it was this whole death scenario, like on death.
And then you go off
making
on
her do a bunch of dirty shit. I loved the bit, but it was so about great. It was about old people. She did not like it. I think she banned me once for that. She banned me once for something else too, but it was like little tiny.
Yeah, I've been banned from
bands.
There. My kids were even banned from there. I had a thing with Paulie years ago, like when I first broke up with my wife. You know, I'd always bring my kids to the Comedy Store at night, and you know, Eleanor would hang with them. You know, so one night, you know, I mean, Dylan, who's now 18, you know, was only 11. You know, and you know, I'm seeing Paulie in the Comedy Store. Paulie had a hamburger joint when he was 12 years old at the Westwood Comedy Store. So I know Paulie growing up since he's that age. So he goes, how many times I got to tell you, don't bring your fucking kid in here? You know, and I was like,
Paulie
right.
said that like that?
But he was standing there. My kid was there. So I go, Dylan, I forgot. I think he was with Steve Simone. I go, Steve, take him outside. You know, I go, you know, like I was going to have to hurt him at that moment. You know, but I didn't, you know, but I got in his, I didn't get physical. You know, you can't do that stuff. But Paulie told his mother that I threw a glass at him. So she banned me and the kids. You know, my kids were banned at 11 and 15 from the comedy, which is so great. I go, and my son Max loved it because he understood it. He was old enough to understand it. And then one night Mitzi comes in and Eleanor's sitting with her and saying, no, no, that's not what happened. I was right in the kitchen when it happened. He didn't throw a glass at Paulie. She goes, if anything, he would have caved his skull in. You know, he just threw the glass in the garbage on his way out. And she, you know, her voice, she's like, well, I knew that Andrew wouldn't do something like that. You know, he wouldn't go to that level.
Yeah, you wouldn't throw a glass.
No, I would never. I would never. You know, that's not what I do.
I could see you hitting somebody.
Yeah, well, you know, but I can't hit somebody unless they, you know, try to hurt me. You know, it was more like I just laid into him for it. And on the way out of the kitchen, the back door, I threw my glass and it broke on the wall, you know, near the garbage can there. But Paulie was out in the hallway. He was nowhere near it. But it was, you know, and we made up. Of course, we're friends today. And, you know, we laugh about all the nonsense. But, you know, it's just a crazy place. Yeah, I mean, sometimes to end the show, you would have loved this. You weren't even out there yet. This is like, I'm talking like 86, 87. So me and Kennison would be the last acts of the night every night. She'd put us on back to back, and it was either he went on first or I went on first. And, like, to end the show sometimes, if he'd go on first, you know, I'd be on stage, and, you know, once he'd get bored with it, he'd throw a chair at me on stage, and then the whole fight would happen on the stage where Carl LeBeau would jump, and you would just see who's ever in the audience. Because the audience is tourists. They don't know what's going on. They don't know. You know, I'm falling over the front tables, knocking people over. And people are just running out of the place. Like, what the fuck is this? Like, all hell breaks loose. There were so many great fake fights at the Comedy Store. Because that's the one thing comics love to do. We love being children.
Don Barris.
Don Barris is like the king of that shit.
I was talking to him last night about you. He loves you to death. And he's like, you should bring up how he used to. Did he used to go on the road with you? Or did you?
Oh, I would have Don. I would put Don in. Whatever I was in, I would put him in. Like, we wound up doing this crazy Frank Stallone movie in Ixtapa, you know, Mexico. And we were stuck there for like 5 weeks. And of course, I made Don do like Alfred Hitchcock in the movie. There was no call for Alfred Hitchcock, but I talked the producers into it, you know. And that's where he actually hurt his foot. You know how he's got like a bad foot?
Yeah,
he hurt his foot.
Well, what happened with Don, he always wants to fight me, you know. No. So one day, you know, he starts in with me on the set, and it's all these Mexican crew members that don't even understand English. And he puts his foot, like there was a hole in the ground. And he wouldn't go to the hospital after to fix it. You know, so to this day, like he just moves the wrong way and he's crippled. You know, he just falls down. And it was funny. What happened was I went back to Madison Square Garden in 2000. And it was Don's job at the time to come there because he really wanted to see it with my wife and my sons. So he was the problem on the plane. Because what happened was he's walking down an aisle and the foot goes. And he's, you know, Don's emotional, you know. So he's screaming, laying on the floor in the plane and scaring the entire flight.
Oh, my God.
You know, and then they get him into a chair and the foot felt better. You know,
so
the cops were at the airport to question him. And I go, your job was to just bring them here. That was the gift. You get to fly for nothing and get a hotel room. Bring them in. And you cause a problem on the fucking airline. But that's Don. You know, that's who he is.
Do you think he was just practical joking with you?
No,
he does
that shit all the time, laying at Norm's on the ground going, no, it really goes. His foot really goes.
Is it a broken foot? Is it a ligament?
I'm sure he, like, chipped something in his ankle, and he just wouldn't go to the hospital. He goes, what are they going to do to me here? You know, he turns into this baby, you know.
No.
Oh, yeah, and he would do the road with me, you know, and I had, when he would do the road with, I would just take him with me. When he would do the road, I had, at that time, I had Eddie Griffin with me. I had, yeah, so Eddie Griffin was, like, the real opener. You know, and so what would happen is I'd give Don 10 minutes right up front. So we'd be on a big, you know, tour bus traveling the country. And one time he's on the bus and he's like, you know how he gets down on himself?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you know, almost like that he's not crying with tears. But I'm going, well, Don, it's because the crowd doesn't respond the way he wants, you know.
Right.
Because he would come out singing Tie a Yellow Ribbon. You know, with the music over it and get the crowd clapping. And so now the song ends and then he goes into another one. He'll go into like Copacabana. So now he's on the bus complaining about, I go, Don, it's your 10 minutes. After they get the joke of who you are, that you're this fucking goofball. Well, now where are the jokes? You know, and he would go, well, you know, I went into the other song. I go, they don't want to hear another. You already did the bit. You had them clap. Now they got to clap to Barry Manilow singing, you know, Copacabana. Who gives a fuck? You know what I mean? Nobody gives a fuck. You create the character. You're this fucking big goofball. And now give them jokes. You know, but we had a lot of fun. And then there would be another rumble on the bus. Now it's him jumping on me and trying to kill me on the bus.
Yeah, his life is constant theater with that guy.
Constant theater.
That's who I hang out with every single day from midnight to about 4 a.m.
Really?
Don Barry?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Oh, and you know, it was hysterical with the movie we did in Ixtapa. They wanted me to stay and film for longer than I wanted to be there. You know, and I'm going, I got to get out of here. I got gigs I got to do. So they promised me a lot of money, you know, in like cash. And Don, you know, through the whole shoot is going, they're never giving it to you. You got to get it now. I go, Don, they're going to pay me. We made a deal. That's it. You know, it was a crazy set. You know, I mean, I never went through anything like this in a film ever. You know, what went on in those 5 weeks. And so he's going, you know, through the 5 weeks, I got to hear how they're not going to pay me. You know, he's just on me. And of course, they give me the money, and Don had to tape it up, you know, all over my body, like that movie Midnight Express.
Did you really?
Yeah, because, you know, it was a part of Mexico that we actually thought that the director was going to have me stopped at the airport. You know, so, you know, we're thinking, all right, how am I going to, because you're not allowed more than like $10,000 in cash, and
right.
This was a lot of money. You know, so he was taping it with this, like, paper tape to my chest, to my thighs, you know, that when I got home, you know, and when we're going, you know, through the airport, I'm going, they're going to stop me. I'm going to be in jail, and whoever stops me is going to be rich. You know, it's that simple. But they didn't stop us, and now I get home, and I take off my shirt, and my wife sees all this money taped to my chest, and she's going, what is that? You know, and I'm going, no, they paid me. You know, that's how they pay you in Mexico. You know, but Dom was just so sure they're not paying me for the. It was just crazy. I wouldn't eat. We only had one meal a day because everybody on the set was getting sick. You know, everybody was going to the hospital, and all we had every day was we went to the same restaurant about 4 o'clock every day. We had pasta with sauce, garlic bread, and Coca-Cola with purified ice. And we wouldn't eat till the next day at the same time. because we figured we'd make it the middle of the day because we're only getting that one meal. We're not eating any of the food there.
Wow.
Yeah, and he lost like 30 pounds. He's going, I got to eat something. You know, he's going, this is ridiculous that we're not eating food. You know, I go, but everybody's falling at the wayside. What are we going to do? We got no, this is survival, my friend.
Those B movie sets can be very fucking sketchy.
And it was for a long time. Yeah. You know, was 5 weeks of the same food. But I'm a creature.
In Mexico.
I could do that. I could eat the same thing every single day. But you want it like twice a day, but the restaurant would close like 9 at night. So we'd have to wait till the next day at 4 o'clock to have the next meal.
Wow.
So it was just bottled water, you know, and that was it. Bottled water and pasta once a day.
What's the name of this movie?
It was called The Good Life. It never came out.
Ah, man.
You know, and I always talk to Frank Stallone. He always says he should release like pieces of it on the internet.
Yeah.
It was the craziest thing, you know. I wanted it to be a comedy. Frank Stallone wanted it to be a drama, you know, because, you know, I would tell the producers, I go, you know, it's really a funny movie, you know, and comedy sells.
Right.
So when Frank would do a scene, he'd come over to the director and go, you know, how was that? And he goes, well, it was very dramatic, you know, and he's going, well, it's supposed to be a drama. And he goes, well, I think it should be funnier. And he goes, but the movie's a fucking drama. Like, so he was flipping out. We had a big fight over that movie. But but the producers now wanted it to just be like a comedy.
Dennis Hopper's in it.
It was supposed to be, you know what it was supposed to be? It was supposed to be Goodfellas on a golf course.
So Dennis Hopper, you.
Dennis Hopper was in it.
Who else is
but
in
it was filmed
Marina
really.
Anderson, Eric
Can you
Best.
Find it anywhere? Is it
no.
online?
It's IMDb,
nowhere.
But it doesn't, yeah, it's not online.
But no one put it online?
But also
David Carradine was in it too?
Yeah. A lot of people were in it.
Beverly D'Angelo.
Sylvester Stallone is in it.
Yes.
That's hilarious. Dude, and it never made it.
You should
never
just sell that it. Shit to Netflix or something like that. You'll make
it's not my movie to sell, but you know, it just wound up the whole time in Ixtapa was drama. You know, but it the movie's hysterical, you know.
Yeah, those B movie sets. I've only been on one. I've been on, well, two B movie sets.
But you know what happened? We had a good director at the beginning. And then the producer, who was an attorney, fired the director and he decided to direct.
Oh, no. You know?
So now what happens is this is where it starts going a little crazy. And I, you know, I can't play golf. I hate fucking golf. I don't have patience to hit one little ball, you know, across the park, whatever, you know. So I wasn't really good at playing the golf, you know, so we would make it that they make fun at me. But I had some, like, golf material at the time where I talked about hating golf. So this new director makes me do some of that material on, like, the master shot, like, on a crane. So he goes, I want you to do that monologue every time, you know. And I go, no, but I'm not doing that monologue every time. I did it for you because you asked me to do it in the master shot just so you hear some talking. And he goes, no, I want you to do it. I go, that's my material for my act. I don't want to do it. You know, you're not paying me for it, are you?
Right.
And he goes, you'll do what I say. I go, I'm not going to do a fucking thing you say. I go, and don't ever tell me what to do again, ever, in front of the camera, which Don Barris is falling down laughing as he's making our little documentary movie with my camera because I was always filming.
Did he literally say, you'll do as I say?
Yeah.
Whoever listens
and
to
he
that.
Goes, and he says, if you don't like it, you could leave. So I said, okay, I'll leave. I go, Don, let's go. And I had Club Soda Kenny there. I go, let's leave. He goes, well, my attorneys will be in touch. I go, asshole, you told me to leave the set. You don't want me in the movie if I don't want to do my own material, and I don't want to do it. So don't fucking tell me what to do, and I'll stay. And that's it. You know, and what Don loved is no matter what the guy did, you know, for his main profession, he goes, you're telling your director, the guy that's supposed to tell you what to do, don't ever tell me what to do again. But that's his only job right now, is telling you what to do. I go, yeah, but you heard what went down, you know, and he agreed with it. And then I decided to direct part of the special. It's not the special, the movie. And because I come to the set one day and it's like 110 degrees. And this guy, you know, the guy directing was, you know, he had a funny character. He was very low-keyed, wear the sombrero because it was Mexico and it was always hot. And I go, what are we doing today? And he goes, I don't know. you know, and I go, do you want me to set the shot up? And he goes, would you please? This is the director now, you know.
He just tapped out.
Yeah, he goes, I just want to finish the movie and go home. And that's how he would talk. That's like an impression of the guy. So now I'm directing the movie, and there was a scene I directed. This was great, because I was like a little at war with Frank Stallone at the time on the set. So I was shooting a scene that I needed Don Barris for, and now I decided Club Soda Kenny will be in the movie also. You know, so Frank is shooting a scene where he's like playing a guitar in his underwear, talking to some girl he was with in bed the night before. So I come in there and I take the sound guys. I'm like, come with me. Just come with me. So now I got the sound guys. So he winds up shooting this whole scene that he's doing, and he doesn't know he doesn't have sound. And all of a sudden, coming from this house, you hear him screaming, he took the fucking sound guys? You made me do all these takes and we don't even have fucking sound? And the director's going, well, Dice is directing a scene right now, you know? And he goes, why the fuck is he directing anything? It's not his movie to direct. I mean, people were having, and then we crashed the golf carts, which I got in trouble for. I played chicken. With the, you know Peter Dobson, he's an actor?
No.
He's been in a lot of stuff. Anyway, so me and Dobson were good friends and decide to play chicken with the golf carts. And I turn at the last second, and my golf cart gets completely destroyed, and Frank goes flying out of it because he's with me going, what are you doing, as we're going towards each other? And I'm going, just stick with me on this. He goes, I don't want to stick with you. Stop driving. You know, but we wouldn't stop driving, and I turn, and they smash in my... So now I'm not allowed to be in the golf cart.
Chicken?
Yeah, chicken, to see who turns first, you know. And then we're having sword fights with the golf clubs. I mean, it was ridiculous what was going on. You know, Beverly D'Angelo's in the movie. Frank Pesce is in the movie.
What was your war with Frank Stallone? What was that
about?
Well,
just that I believed the movie should be a comedy.
Oh, okay, that.
You know, so I started doing, like, an impression of him... on screen, but because I could do him really well, the way he stands, and so now he sees the final cut and he goes, what are you doing behind me? You know, I go, an impression of you. He goes, you're not supposed to be doing an impression of me. I'm the leader of the gang. Yeah, I go, but it's funny. And he goes, but the movie's not funny. You know, and of course we all made up after the, you know, movie, you know, never came out.
You know, make up with everybody. You make up with Paulie. You made up with that guy.
Yeah, because it's more fun to have your friends.
Are you going
to
make
and
up
then
with...
laugh about it?
You and Dom Herrera, ever going to make up?
You know what? It's not that I'm even, like, mad at a guy like Herrera. You know, he's just stupid. You know what I mean? You know, I really don't have...
I wish you guys would work that out.
There's nothing to work out. Well, you know, when
just call them stupid. I'd say you have an issue.
Well, calling somebody stupid and saying I don't like a guy are two different things.
Why would you say Herrera's stupid?
I'll sit here and go, he's a great comic. I think he's a great comedian. But, you know, he's just too bitter for me. You know what I mean? You know,
and him have always had, like, this antagonizing...
No, he always had it
with you.
You know, used to... You know, I came into Philly years ago, and, you know, I would headline the Comedy Factory outlet. You know, so they would have him open the shows... You know, and he would look at my character like Italian rather than just a Brooklyn guy. And, you know, my real name's Andrew Clay Silverstein, and I went to Andrew Dice Clay. You know, so when we were on the same Rodney special, you know, and he just got fucking jealous that my career went through the roof, and, you know, and he didn't, you know. And the funny thing about that was, I might have even talked about this on your show, that he would have been the perfect guy... You know, when I was doing the arenas, you know, to open those shows, you know, because people did like him on the special. But like I said, not everybody becomes a megastar. It just doesn't happen. Not everybody becomes the fucking Beatles. I'm sorry. You know, but he's a great comic. And because he had, you know, he started going on radio shows and saying my real last name. And I'm like, what's the problem? A Jew from Brooklyn can't be a tough, good looking guy. Is that the fucking problem? You know, unless I'm Italian.
Well, what,
you know,
the name Clay, where'd that come from?
Well, that's just my middle name, Andrew Clay Silverstein.
Oh.
It's what my parents gave me.
So when you decided to just go as Dice Clay, why'd you decide to do that?
Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah. Why'd you... Silverstein was... I mean.
Well, you know what the original name was? When I'd go on stage, is this was funny. Because when I, you know, my original act was like Impressions. I'll just put it to you that way. You know, doing Travolta and Stallone and Jerry Lewis.
Your Travolta is insane. You know. Your Travolta is the best Travolta on earth. No one nails it.
Well, like, the thing about Travolta is that, you know, he had those Brooklyn characters. And, you know, we were similar looking when I was 17 years old, you know. And I was just able to do them. You know, I could turn into Vinnie Barbarino. Like, all right, so you asked me, Vinnie, you know, where's your homework?
Vinnie, where's your homework?
What? That was the act.
That was the whole act?
No.
You had, I mean, like, you could I say words. I can't believe,
you know, I did my homework, but my dog ate it. I couldn't believe it. You know, and I would do all these Travolta. But after the Impressions, when I came to the Comedy Store, after I did, I got a shot on Don Kirshner's rock concert, and I did that whole act. But now it was about the acting thing, and I was thinking, well, nobody's going to buy me to do Travolta or Stallone. I got to develop my own stage persona.
Do you know what kind of nuclear arsenal of a joke you have in your wheelhouse if you just did it with... You do an impression of Travolta and have some massage bit. Do you know with that impression how good that bit would be? I know you don't want to do it, and out of courtesy to Travolta, I know you think he's very talented. You don't do jokes about him. But my God, what a fucking crushing bit you would have.
Yeah, but I can't. You know what?
Your impression is really good, and then with the situation is so ridiculous. Him just wanting to get jerked off by all these guys. Him saying, let me massage you. You know, like, the whole thing is great. I mean, it's ripe for comedy. I'm not hating the guy. I love him.
Would you like me to dig my thumbs into your neck a little? I could see you got a little crick. But I don't.
Come on, you telling me that you pretending to massage a guy,
and then Stallone says to him, then Sly says, "You know what? That feels pretty good." No, I got a sense of humor about it. I just feel he's been through a lot.
Oh, he's been through a lot, but he's also dished out a lot.
He's one of our greatest stars, so I can't do it.
That's hilarious. He's a great actor, no doubt about it. But he's also a freak, likes getting jerked off by dudes. There's no question about that either. That seems to be a reoccurring theme. And I ain't hating the guy, man. You should be able to do whatever the fuck you want to do.
Well, you know what it is?
There's a lot of guys who would blow him just because he's a bad motherfucker.
But that's what I always felt the problem with women were. Maybe that's why he went to the guys. They just don't know how to jerk.
I think he's a freak.
You know what I mean?
Is that it?
You try to teach them. You know what I mean?
Some girls just seem to have a born-in ability to do it correctly. Some girls just get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Squeeze hard. Play.
All right.
Focus.
Don't Come even on. Say my whatever
wife
the
is
fuck
in here.
Your thing is.
My wife right. is squeeze hard. Yeah. Who cares what somebody's doing to you?
Hey,
unless
down.
They got their legs wrapped behind their ears.
Settle down.
Yeah, look at him, Mr. Date.
Not by the hair of your chinny chin chin.
King of the date. You know, but no, I love Travolta.
So you can only do
impressions of the people in film that I really love.
Right. It's too bad you can't do it.
Well, I just did it for you, though. I gave you a little. Last time I wouldn't do it.
That's a taste.
Yeah, I mean, I could come up with it, trust me. But, you know, I got to leave the guy alone.
That's a beautiful thing. I would not leave him alone, even if we were tight.
Can you do Travolta?
No.
Do you do any impressions?
I could do a couple.
I want to see one of your shows now. I'm not even kidding.
I'll send you my special. I'll gift it to you.
Hey, I'll give the $5. I'm willing to pay. You know what I mean? You know, it's just, you know, I got a heart for people. That's what it is.
I understand.
You know, so even like with Irera, like you were saying, you know what I mean?
I don't
hate the guy. You know, there are guys I don't like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, just don't like for many reasons.
Right.
You know, it's his own, you know, jealousy would overcome him, I guess. But he missed out on the greatest gig in the world, you know, doing these arenas because he is an Italian from Philly. I mean, I did the Spectrum 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And he would have been great in those rooms. So I would book Lenny Clark, and Lenny Clark wound up, I'll never forget, I did the Universal Amphitheater, and Lenny calls me up and he goes, you know, can I have some people come to the show? And I'm going, Lenny, that's what it's all about. Like, why wouldn't you be able to have people come to the show? It's 6,000 people, you know?
Right.
And he winds up, I don't know if you know Lenny Clark's whole career,
well.
But they gave him a sitcom. He got a sitcom that night. And that didn't work out, and he wound up on the sitcom with, what was it, Frasier? You know, Frasier, I think it
John
was.
John Larroquette?
No. Yeah, where he played a cop.
No, wasn't it? He wasn't on the John Larroquette show.
No, but it might have been that. Well, you could look. Red Band, do something. Yeah, you're running the panel.
Yeah, look, you do the IMDb for Lenny Clark. By the way, Lenny Clark.
No, but Lenny Clark wound up with a huge career.
Yeah, well, one of the funniest guys
and it was
ever
one night,
Boston.
No, but I'm telling you, it was that night that it all came together for him.
Lenny Clark gave me some great fucking advice, too. Yeah, like, my second time ever getting paid to perform, I opened up for Lenny. This guy that I was working for, Norm LaFoe, who was booking gigs in Western Massachusetts, had these little one-night bars. He had this place called Jay's in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. And I got to open up for Lenny. This is after Lenny had been on HBO. And I got to go. And Mike Clark, it was a funny moment because his brother, who's a great guy, still books a club called Giggles in Saugus.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mike Clark is the shit. He's just a great, great fucking guy.
I never met him, but I know he's a great guy.
He gives me advice.
His reputation.
He's like, pal, you're pretty funny, but you're going to have to clean it up a little bit.
Really?
Yeah, he's like,
he was talking to the right one.
That Madonna bit, you know, that one is just too much. It was just saying, like, for his rooms, you know, like, where I would work. But then Lenny comes off stage and goes, kid, that was fucking hilarious. Holy shit, that fucking Madonna bit was fucking hilarious. That heavy Boston accent, and Mike's like, I just got done telling him to stop doing that bit.
It was the John Larroquette show.
It was the John Larroquette
show. And he also did Lenny, a show called Lenny.
Yeah, I should know that because it was next door to us. When we were filming News Radio, he was over there. He said that John Larroquette guy was a twat. He would just say how fucking horrendous it was to work with that guy.
Yeah, but he did great.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
Lenny was a top-notch stand-up, like, before anybody.
These are all the guys that were on the Rodney special.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you had Lenny Clark. You had, they had to fill a spot, so they put Barry Sobel in there. You know?
Barry Sobel, at one point in time, was pretty fucking funny. Pretty fucking funny.
No, he's a funny guy, but, you know, when we did the Rodney special, you know how he wears baseball jackets?
Uh-huh.
So he shows up with a motorcycle jacket, right? A black and he's going on like two before me. It was Lenny, then Sobel, then Carol Leifer, then myself, then Bill Hicks, Irera, and Bob Schimmel. And so he comes in wearing a motorcycle jacket, and he goes, this is what I'm wearing on the show tonight. So I'm like, all right, another jerk off, because I didn't know him well, you know. And I go over to Rodney. I go, look what the guy's wearing, Rodney. And Rodney goes, yeah, so what? You know, I go, well, he wants to wear it on the show. And then Rodney caught it, you know. He's going, Barry, come here, man. You know what I mean? He goes, what are you going to wear on the show? And I'm standing right there. He goes, well, I'm going to wear this jacket. And Rodney goes, if you wear that jacket, man, you're not on the show, okay? Dice wears the leather. You know, and of course Barry took out his little baseball jacket, and that was the end of that.
Do you think he was trying to do it to, like,
you know what? All these
swagger
guys,
jack you?
You know, when I prepared, you know, just like I'm talking about my special now, right? Mm-hmm. I really prepare. You know, I'm not going to do a half-assed job when I'm up there. And when that Rodney special, you know, I had about 6 months to get ready for that. And every night I'd go on at the Comedy Store. I wouldn't care if it was two fucking people in the crowd. I'm rehearsing. I'm rehearsing the act. That's it. Joke to joke to joke. You know, Halloween, there's Dom Irera just fucking around on stage. And I'm like, these guys just don't get it. Because I knew when I would be in front of that camera that the only thing I needed to worry about was playing the people and the people at home. I didn't want to think about the act. I wanted to be on automatic pilot because your nerves get to you and you want to do the performance now. And these guys would just fuck around at the store. They wouldn't rehearse it. You know, and then they show up to do the special, and everybody's nervous. And I'll never forget, I walked from the Regency Hotel. You know, I just wanted to feel New York, and I was in my outfit for the Rod, and I'm wearing a belt buckle, you know, this fucking big, you know, with the sunglasses. And I come walking into the club. I got the glasses on. And Rodney goes, how do you feel? He's like, how do you feel, man? You know how Rodney would be like. And I go, Tonight they pay. Tonight they get disciplined. And Rodney, tonight they pay. Okay, man, you're ready. Okay. Tonight they're going to get disciplined. Did you hear that? And he just got such a kick out of it, you know. And when I went on, it was like, just kill him. First show out of the box.
I love that, you know? Rodney did that. That Rodney had those specials and introduced so many fucking comedians.
Well, you know what? That's, if I do more as far as comedy specials, that's what I want to do now. I want to put guys on that I think are great, go around the country, find the best.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
And deliver those guys to America.
That's a great idea.
You know, and, you know, I spoke to Showtime. They're into it, you know. It's, but first, I got to do this.
Yeah.
You know, and really, I think people are just going to be fucking thrilled with this. You know, I was thrilled with the end result. L.A. Rocks just rocks the room, which was a little scary to me because when I saw the audience, you know, my boy, just like comics, now you got, I think we used 18 cameras, you know, for the shoot. So, you know, you know what I'm talking about, just the pressure of, you know, with producer, director, all the people involved in the special. And, you know, my kids came out, you know, Eleanor introduced them, and they just rocked the room, and the crowd went nuts because I'm worried that they're not going to let them get started. You know what I mean? And they just rocked it. I'm so proud of them. And they're actually going to be at the Whiskey on January 12th. So people that want to see a great band that's breaking, L.A. Rocks, could go to the Whiskey on the 12th of January.
It's always hard to get yourself into normal performance mode when you're doing a special. You know, it's like it's when all the everything's riding on this one night. You got two shows to get it right. Like sometimes that pressure can be overwhelming.
And you want to know something? I only wanted to do one.
Ugh,
and, yeah. You know, it was the people at Showtime that were smart enough to go, no, you're doing two. You know? Yeah. And they were right because I fucked up a few times in the first one.
Yeah, it's always hard to just do
one. I wasn't nervous. I was excited about it, though. You know, it's the nervous excitement, you know, yeah. And then you get that first laugh and you just loosen up.
Yeah.
But I was just so prepared. I mean, like you said, you came to Vegas and saw the show and saw me working on it. And, you know, Vegas crowds aren't as great as crowds around the country, you know, right. And that's another thing I like. So it felt like the Comedy Store,
right?
You know, because in Vegas, there's a lot of variables going on. There's gambling, drinking, fighting with your chick over losing the fucking money. Now you're at a show 10 at night, you know, and you're not even in the mood for that show.
Yeah.
You know, so the crowds, you never get that full amped up crowd that you would get like when you're on the road doing a concert, you know, that they're just coming for the concert. So when I got to Chicago and, you know, I hear the crowd before I even come on, they're doing the dice, dice, dice. I'm going, all right, this is the real deal now. So, yeah, I fucked up a couple times in the first taping of it. And, you know, and then I got angry. It became dice mean. You know, for the second show, and I just delivered the way I knew I can.
One of the things that helped me, and this is, I think, would help you too, doing a podcast helps you on stage tremendously. You get so used to talking to people, you get so used to doing things like live, that when I did these, the special in Atlanta, it was the most natural I'd ever felt being on stage.
Because I'd
always,
you do it?
The Tabernacle? I'd always had a problem with that, where, like, when I was taping something, I'd be, like, stiff and tight, and I just, like, never
so
felt like
so you were
like
really happy with
loose.
The outcome of your performance? Forget
I was 100% how I always am.
Uh-huh.
It was 100%. Like, even said it while I was on stage. I was like, this is the most relaxed I've ever been doing one of these things.
Yeah, because
I didn't.
Because you were so prepared. So
I prepared. I put a lot of sets in to prepare, a lot of writing in to prepare. I had all the material, like, completely down. And, but it was the audience is so fucking enthusiastic. It's like,
that's what you need.
Yeah, they're so fun.
You know,
that
and like I said, that's where we do parallel because we both draw crazy audiences.
Yeah.
You know, people that are really out for the hardcore comedy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you really delivered it then.
Well, I am so happy that there's still guys out there that are doing anything controversial because I think this is such a strange time when it comes to comedy. You know, there's been so many from the Tosh thing to the Tracy Morgan thing to, you know, just fill in the blank of any comedian that says anything. The Gilbert Godfrey thing when he got in trouble for a lot of shit. It's like at a certain point in time, it's like we're gonna if you keep going down this super ultra sensitive fucking stupid path.
Yeah, then there'll be no fun.
There's gonna be
then
no
there'll
fun.
Be no comedy.
And by the way, you're just saying what you don't like. Okay, you're saying you don't like it. Well, fucking don't listen. It's really simple. If you're not into what a guy like Tracy Morgan would say or a guy like you would say, well, then don't fucking listen. No, yeah, no one's requiring you to. You can't tell me that it's bad. You can't tell me that it's real. You know it's a joke. He's a fucking comedian.
Yeah, that shouldn't be. You know, it's like I say, these comics are being put on trial.
Right.
You know, and, you know, there's even a bit that, you know, I do where I use the fag word.
Well, it's one of my favorite bits from your last thing.
Well, I did an interview for Rolling Stone like 3 weeks ago, and, you know, the guy asked me why I used the word fag, you know, and I said, well, did you listen to the whole, and he listened to the whole show, he watched the whole show, and I said, do you see where I go with the bit? What I'm really doing by the end of that bit is sticking up for the gay community is what I'm doing. It winds up about, like, you know, when the guys were running, you know, trying out for president, whatever. And so it's about the whole marriage thing. You know, I don't want to do the bit on the air.
Yeah, no.
You know, but I go, that's what the bit's about. I go, and if I would say, you know, catch gay rather than catch fag, I go, fag is a funny word. You know what I mean? And for people that don't like it, well, don't watch my show. But it's funny, and that's who I am on stage. But if you're going to talk about anything, talk about what the bit really, you know, turns into. You know, not a word.
Have you ever done anything, any of your old material, that you look back now and you're like, I wouldn't do that today. I wouldn't say that today.
You know what? I really don't have many regrets on the material. You know, I don't use too much of it in the special. I do a couple classic bits. That's what I call them. You know, like today on I was on Good Morning LA, and, you know, they played like some of this midget bit that I've done for years. But these are the new fans, so you give them some of the classic stuff. You give them the Mother Goose, but other than that, you know, it's a 98% new act. You know, I've updated, you know, how I feel about different things, and, you know, like I said, we're living in a different world. Technology. We're living in a world where, you know, women today are brought up on porn. You know, God forbid they don't have a profile shot of a bleached out asshole on their website or whatever. They feel they're not happening. So everything is new, but it's got that, you know, real heavy bite to it, and it's got the anger that I like to bring to stage. I mean, I couldn't do it like you. I mean, when I see you screaming up there, I had a couple screaming years, but not as intense. Like, that's what would make me sit down and watch you. I wanted to see, how long can he scream? How long can he put that energy out? And you could, back then, you were going like 2 hours you could do, and just, I go, he loves it. You know, it was almost like it was almost like you doing a verbal workout. You know what I mean? You know, it wasn't like, all right, I do A, B, C, D, and I'm done. You would just go, and I'm going, kind of, what is this guy taking for that energy? Like, I'm watching you today, you know, talk about, like, the different vitamins and everything that you're selling, and I'm going, he's taking something that could really make, I'm thinking maybe I should take some of those fucking vitamins, because you could really go for a long time.
Yeah, well, it's not just
top volume.
Yeah, it's not just about taking vitamins. It's definitely about what you eat. It's really important.
No, but I mean the energy. That's what I love, because, you know, when somebody's putting out that kind of energy, it's watchable.
Well, yeah, now that's a good point that you brought up earlier. We didn't touch back on, but the idea that there's something wrong with you if you're moving around or like putting out a lot of effort. There was a time in comedy where guys like didn't respect anybody who didn't just stand still and just say it with your words. And it's like, why would you lose like that performance? Like, I would see a guy like maybe Jim Brewer is a good example, who's really physical on stage. And I would see like that the physical aspects of him moving around was really half the bit.
You know, and
it's hilarious.
And any comic that doesn't believe that isn't a real performer.
Yeah, and when it comes for that, like, when it calls for that, rather, there's nothing wrong
with
doing
anybody,
it. But
anybody, just pace a little.
But it became a thing. Do you remember when it was like a thing amongst comedians that if you know they like didn't respect guys who like put forth too much effort?
Well, when I came
to
the Comedy Store, because I had some, you know, at that time with the cassette tapes, I had my music on tapes, Travolta,
right,
and do like I would do the Grease Lightning number. I felt like the Serpico of the Comedy Store,
right?
Because comics would go, you know, this is the music store, not the comedy. This is the Comedy Store, not the music store. And I go, because you can't do that. How does that sound? You know, you just can't do that. And you don't look like this to do that. You're an ugly guy. You know what I mean? So you should be doing what you... Oh, I had argument after argument with comics. I go, well, you know what? The club owner thinks I am funny.
Well, there's always there's a weird thing amongst comedians where they want other comedians to be doing their kind of comedy. It's ridiculous. It's like a rapper going up to a guy who plays jazz and getting mad at him for liking the fucking flute.
Yeah, you know? I mean, you know, but you know, I also feel with comics is, you know, not this enough camaraderie. I've told you that before.
Yeah, well, I agree. Look, I agree.
You know, I just don't feel they back each other up enough. That's why it's always good. Like when you came to my show, I was thrilled. Because here's another comic that I respect coming to see me perform. It's almost like, you know, Sinatra going to see Sammy Davis. You know, like they back each other up with it.
Yeah, it's very important to me. I think, first of all, as I've gotten older and been doing stand-up longer and longer, the more I've appreciated the art form of it, you know, whether it's the style that you do or the style that even Seinfeld. I'm a fan of any style of good, like...
Yeah, well, I love Seinfeld.
I love Gaffigan. Gaffigan is fucking hilarious.
And I love...
Very clean, and like anybody can listen to it. You know, I love that style as well. But I just love the art form. So for me, camaraderie between other comics, like it's huge, 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 very important.
But what I also like is this I get a kick out of, like the non camaraderie of the cleaner comics to guys like us.
Yeah.
Like they look at us, it's like, oh, look who walked in. You know, we're the clean guys.
Yeah.
You know, and Seinfeld always had his little group of guys, which I think are hysterical. Him, Larry Miller, you know, Paul Reiser, very clean. You know, to me, they're all similar in their styles on stage.
Well, I think Seinfeld was legit. That was legitimately him. But there was a lot of guys that came up that were like sort of.
No,
like
it's legitimately him. But that whole group had like a certain style. Like to me, Larry Miller just killed.
Influenced though. What I'm saying is that there's a lot of guys that became Seinfeld-like. There was a lot of very Seinfeld-like observational guys that I don't know if they would have been that way if it wasn't for Jerry, because Jerry had a very specific style that a lot of those clean guys imitated that style, like really clearly.
And it's really – no, Seinfeld I love. I think he's just – Larry Miller just kills me.
Well, I love him on TV. I mean, acting. I mean, I think he's one of the funniest guys ever.
Did you ever see his stand-up?
Yeah, I've seen his stand-up. Yeah, I haven't seen in a long time. I saw some old Evening at the Improv. It's very funny
that's
guy, though. Very
but
funny
just
guy.
Just his sound effects and, you know, the way, you know, he's always shocked by things like that.
Very bright guy, too.
Yeah, that's why I don't like to hang out with him. He is. He's really smart. And
you don't like it?
No, I love him, but, you know, we used to do, like, La Jolla together and everything, and, you know, there was a story where we did a private party, and, you know, I was, you know, and I the guy offered me like $1,000 to do a birthday party, you know, in La Jolla. And I go over to Larry and I said, we'll split the money. You open for me at the birthday party, you know. And it was this big mansion. And I think this is the guy that invented sex wax for surfboards.
Surfboards.
And so we show up and I see a bunch of, you know, five-year-olds, you know. And I'm going, you know, I call the guy over. I go, well, you really going to have me do my act? And he goes, no, that we got a clown for them. You're for us. We're going inside. So it was all the adults. And Larry goes up, and I'm laughing. He does his act. And now he's sitting. It was like one of those living rooms, step-down living room. So he's sitting on the step, and he's watching me. And he's laughing hysterically, you know. And afterwards, you know, I'm asking him, I go, you see my act every night. Why are you laughing so hard? He goes, do you know what a stupid man you are? And I go, why? He goes, you were using a $20,000 vase as your ashtray. I go, what are you talking? He goes, the big vase that was next to you. You didn't know where to put your cigarettes, so you were putting them in this. The vase was bigger than me. And he goes, and I couldn't stop laughing because everybody was looking at each other every time you flicked your cigarette in this vase. He goes, you're a very stupid man. And it just, his delivery would just make me laugh my balls off.
That's hilarious.
I love those guys. And I go, you know, Larry Miller's the guy that got me into the comic strip when I started out. You know, and that's where it all started with the monologist.
Yeah.
You know.
I've always hated that whole idea that there's like a good way to do comedy and then there's an easy way to do comedy. Because why is it that when I would go to see a guy like you or watch a guy like Joey Diaz, why is it that I laugh so hard? Like, what are you telling me? There's something wrong with
because
me?
Because it's balls out.
But it is balls out. No, I understand. But why is anybody saying that there's something wrong with that? Like, that's there's a weird
you know,
thing
also, it's also
in
the way you brought
heads.
Up. You know yeah. what I mean? Like, these are very clean-cut guys. Yeah. You know, and I love Seinfeld. I like him as a person. I like him as a comic. But, they were, you know, these are guys that actually went to college. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how to talk to them.
Right.
You know, it's a different mindset, education-wise. And,
I understand all that, but it's really, it's a reservations. It's like they're reserved and uptight, whereas when you see someone like you or someone like Joey Diaz or saying something completely outrageous, they can't go with it. They can't just relax and go with it. They're restricted. They're pulled back.
Yeah, is that what they think?
Yeah, there's something. They just can't cut loose. You can't be smart and enjoy a good dirty joke. Well, that's ridiculous. Then you're obviously not smart enough because you should be laughing at almost everything you could possibly laugh at.
Well, you know what? Let me see one of these fucking clean motherfuckers sell 300 arena shows, and then I'll give it up for them.
It's very hard to sell an arena show.
You know, I mean, I did over 300 of those. Jesus you know, Christ. And nobody, you know, is ever going to top that, ever.
300?
You know, and
arena?
I did it without, like, I don't
What's
even
What's an
really,
arena officially? 14,000? How many thousand?
It could go anywhere from 15 to, you know, the biggest one I did was 21,500.
Jesus.
And it was a 41-minute sellout.
Oh,
it was
my
the Brendan
God.
Byrne in Jersey. And, I mean, the LA Forum, I sold out in a couple hours.
21,000 fucking people.
Yeah, well, picture doing 100,000, you know, at the Rose Bowl with being the middle act for Metallica and Guns N' Roses.
So what happens between doing these incredible arenas and then slowly sort of backing away from comedy a little bit, not doing as much?
It was a slow thing, though. I did the arenas for about 6 years, till around 95. And that's when it didn't go sour. I mean, you know, at that point, you know, the movie career was sort of non-existent, you know, other than B-movies because of the backlash of my stand-up and the press. And so there were no big movies coming, you know, after Ford Fairlane, you know. But even with the arenas, I would do cut-down arenas, like 10,000 seats a night. And that went on for a while. You know, then there were five, you know, you did. You know, in this day, you do 5,000 seats today, that's unreal.
It's a lot of,
you know, I mean, rock bands, you know, it's a different time. It's a recession. It's just a different time. So, you know, when I see a comic doing 2,000, 1,500, 2,000 seats, maybe 2,500 seats, that's superstardom for a comic. You know, I mean, think about it. 2,000 people a night coming to see you is unreal.
It's pretty weird.
I just, you know, always had this thing in my head. You know, because I was so bad. Like I say, you know, my education was like non-existent. I mean, school was just more of a place to go and hang out and play the drums twice a day. You know, and if it wasn't for the drums and music, I probably would have never graduated high school. Because school just didn't interest me. You know, that's the bottom line. So, you know, I wasn't good in sports. Not that I wasn't a big guy. I just wasn't good at it. And, you know, by the time I was 12 years old, I was into all this stuff from doing impressions to playing the drums to, you know, that type of thing. And when I got into comedy and I saw the kind of guys you're talking about, very straight monologists, you know, I just wanted to be an actor and, you know, use the comedy stage to develop my acting chops. And the dice thing happened. So I decided, well, if I'm going to stay in this game and be a comic, I want to create the most visually exciting comic people have ever seen in the world, ever. You know, and honestly, you know, when you see the special, and I got great respect for you and what you do, but you're going to respect the special.
I would definitely respect it. You know,
no, but I mean, you'll see what I mean, because I deliver exactly what, you know, all these fans I've had through the years want to see from me. And I like giving them what they want to see. I don't want to come up there all cleaned up with maybe, you know, not a tie, but, you know, a sport jacket and just black pants. I'm like, for what?
Right.
You know what I mean? This is how I like to dress. You know, I look good enough to dress in it, you know, so why not just deliver what they want to see and just pound them over the fucking heads with the filthiest shit that I could come up with, because we're living in the filthiest time with the filthiest fucking people.
Yet the backlash is the strongest than it's ever been.
But I don't care about the backlash anymore. Years ago I did because I didn't get it, because guys came before me, everybody from, Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor, guys like, so I'm going, what am I doing any different than them? You know what I mean? And so now I'm at a point in my life where if you don't like me, who gives a fuck for you? I don't give a fuck if you see tomorrow. That's how I think about it. If a writer writes, if a journalist writes me up like a bad write-up, I'm like, well, what do I give a fuck? Do I know this person? Do I care what they fucking feel? Right. They're the ones writing me up.
Well, and it's never fair
anyway.
Who
gives a fuck for them, Joe?
It's like, would a jazz critic review a hip-hop concert? No, why would they? It doesn't make any sense. So for someone to be, a comedy critic, it's like, wow, there's a lot of different kinds of comedy. You just because you have a specific taste, a personal taste, doesn't mean the other comedy's
bad. Yeah, because, I
come
from...
It means it's not for you.
Well, I come from, like I said, I like dealing with, I love seeing the uncomfortability of people in the front row. I love seeing...
Well, it's live performance, and that's one of the fun aspects.
Yeah, and if you're all clean up there, I just don't think I would have any fun.
I have fun, watching a guy, Gaffigan or watching a guy like Seinfeld, but it's not the same kind of fun.
Yeah, but, Seinfeld's one of a kind.
Yeah, but it's not the same kind of fun. It's still not the same kind of fun as, watching a guy like you. Because watching a guy like you, you'll say the most ridiculous shit ever. One of the things that I was howling is when I came backstage afterwards and I was talking to you about it. I go, yeah, you're like, I don't do any research. Like, we were talking
comedy. Yeah. It's just about the fucking laugh.
But it was like how you were just, breaking down the whole process. I do no research. I claim no responsibility.
No responsibility. If I was running for office, I'd have to do a little research. For comedy, that's why I try to explain in that album, The Day the Laughter Died, that it's just about funny.
Right.
I don't care what it is.
Right.
Just be fucking funny. And I got my rules. Like, I won't, bring up a disaster where people get killed. You know what I mean?
You won't make fun of John Travolta. You have strong rules.
Yeah, I do have strong rules in that way. What happened with the hurricane. There's no jokes for me when it comes to that stuff. Because... people are getting killed, and there's families that are mourning these people. So it's like, where do I have the right to make fun of that?
Right.
So I try to stay away from that kind of stuff. But when it comes to sex, come on, it's just sex, so it's okay.
Did you ever feel like at a time that you ever crossed the line, though? Like, did you ever say anything, whether it's about immigrants or gay people or anything?
When it comes to people, when I make fun of Asians and call them Chinamen, it's just funny. It's a funnier word than Asian. You know what I mean? Chinaman, chink, it's all funny. It's a great word.
Well, if it was an angry Chinese dude, though, staring at you while you were talking
like that. I do it right to, I talk about fat girls, and sometimes I got chicks in the front row, and I'm going, all right, so how much does the fat girl I talk about have to weigh tonight? Because I've had some beasts sit in the fucking front row.
And so you have to double her.
But like my wife says, fat girls love me because I talk about them. But, when I'm talking about a chick that's bigger than the bed I'm fucking her on, it's funny. Because no girl in the crowd is going to go, well, I'm not bigger than an Eastern King. You know what I mean?
Right.
They look at themselves like little.
Right.
Because I'm not looking to hurt them. I'm just looking to be funny.
Right.
And let them laugh too. Fat girls are allowed to laugh.
They are, but they don't particularly.
The fucking blubber starts to jiggle and shit.
They don't particularly like fat girl jokes, though, in my experience.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe
I'll
it's just
tell
the
you,
way
the fat girls in my crowd, they like it. They really like it. They're literally rolling in the fucking aisle. I've had a girl throw herself on the floor and start rolling around, and I'm looking like, this is hysterical. It happened once.
She was speaking
I've had a heckle fight with an 86-year-old woman.
Really?
That I had to come into the middle of a crowd on a New Year's Eve and just
Where
give
was
her
this?
A big kiss. It was in San Antonio, Texas.
God damn.
Yeah, and this 86, she was like, I know they're not, whatever part of America, I don't follow the map that much with the geographical shit, but it's not, but she sounded Southern,
San Antonio, Texas?
Yeah, they have that twang to them. Right. And she's like, it was like one of those skinny, she was 86 or 87,
wiry.
Slapping her knee going, you dirty motherfucker, you are a dirty, and she's as filthy as me, You know, that was one of my greatest heckles, and it's something I didn't get on. I wasn't even filming back. I was probably, 27, And, yeah, I've had some great heckle fights in the days where they would actually look to throw lines at you.
Right.
You know, rather than just being drunk and, you fucking suck.
Well, especially the store is some of the worst places ever. For heckling. First of all, because there's no crowd control, and second of all, because Hollywood is always filled with people that are unhappy. Most people are not achieving their dreams here. The majority of people are struggling.
Yeah, they fail.
Yeah, the majority. And you got a lot of, wannabe actors, wannabe musicians,
if you're at the Comedy Store and go, well, what do you do? Well, I'm an actor. Okay, good for you. But that guy could wind up a superstar.
Oh, he could,
this is the place.
Look, it is possible.
But it's fun to piss on it.
There's a lot of that bitterness that's in the air, and there's a lot of that in the crowd. It was one of the reasons why it was such a good place to work out, because that was not an impressed audience.
Yeah.
They were not impressed with you.
I got heckled the other day by a guy in a wheelchair, and he comes there, I guess, once in a while, but he can't talk or move. Like, he has, one of those where he just has, 1,000 computers and cell phones in front of him, and they put him right in the front, and
Wait a minute. He has cell phones and computers.
He's hooked up everything, like a fax machine.
Does his hands work?
Yeah, one hand works to move, and one hand's just pushing iPad buttons and stuff and doing things. But
he talks through that?
He doesn't really talk. He just goes like that. And so while you're on stage, they put him right in the front row too. The whole show, he's just going, but then he'll say something that means he's like, suck my dick, and stuff like that. And he's just fucking saying these horrible things the whole time. And
I just like that he's attracted to you.
Right.
Wow, he wants you to blow him.
But no, he's like, he's just fucking with you. And he just fucks with every single comic. And he sits there from it's 7 o'clock, whatever that open mic show, all the way to 2 in the morning.
Why don't they kick him out?
I don't know. It drives everybody crazy.
Yeah, because that's a club, to work the new stuff out. Yeah. It always sucks when you have a guy that you just have to handle rather than work your material.
Yeah. Well, the other problem is when someone before you doesn't deal with the heckler, and then you got to go up, and then it's already out of control because they already feel like that's a part of the show.
Yeah, and they, continue the bullshit.
Well, and also, let's be honest, at the Comedy Store, there's a lot of fucking people that they just, for whatever reason, they're still doing stand-up, but they checked out a long time ago. Sort of going through the motions, and it's not very good material, and for whatever reason, they don't have any talent, for whatever reason. And you'll see them go on stage, and then these hecklers start eating them up. And then you have to go up and back clean up, up on aisle 9.
But what I
Jesus
do? When I do go on, I always make like there's nobody on before me. And just start from zero. I don't care if somebody had a fight with somebody in the crowd. I'm not going up there to just one comic, the whole lineup is one comic.
Right.
Getting into it with this one person.
Mm-hmm.
I just start from zero, and if somebody says something, Dice Mean comes out, and hopefully I handle it right there and then.
The Comedy Store was the best workout for that place.
It's the greatest. I've gone through a lot of stuff. I used to get to open for Eddie Murphy there all the time. Mitzi would use me to go on after him.
Yes.
Because nobody wanted to go on after him.
Yeah.
Those kind of things are like an honor at that time. That's how you got to meet some of those guys. And Murphy was always and I didn't understand it at the time when he would be nervous to go out there on a Monday night in the main room. And I go, what are you nervous about? They're all here for you. I didn't get it because once you have that fame, now you have to live up to it.
Yeah.
And I didn't. I was just excited about going on after the guy. I got to follow Pryor at the store after the burn incident.
Uh-huh.
And everybody was coming to see him.
Yeah.
I mean, you had Sammy Davis sitting on the floor with his legs folded. You had Burt Reynolds there with Sally Fields. You had De Niro there with Scorsese.
Burt Reynolds and Sally Fields.
And I would come up there like I was playing a bowling alley and just go into it and just make sure I kicked their ass every time.
Mitzi putting you on after Strong Axe was a big move for everybody. Big move for me and one of the guys that I had
to follow. Who'd you get to follow?
I followed you a lot. I followed you a lot in the early days, in the 94-ish.
Wow.
And when I first started coming there, she would throw me on after you. I followed Pryor.
Yeah, because you need an animal to follow an animal.
And not only that, it's good for you to go on after someone strong because you realize you can't have any fluff in your act, you can't have any bullshit. You got to cut right to the funny stuff. You got to impress them right away, get them right off the bat, hold on to them. It was it's a good exercise in learning, especially when they love the guy before. You would be up fucking destroy, and then some unknown person has to go on after you.
Yeah, but that's what she would do. That's where Mitzi was great.
Yes,
she would pick the right guy for that.
Yeah. Martin Lawrence, I used to go on after him a lot.
Yeah, I never followed Martin. Eddie, I followed
a lot. When Martin was in his prime, I'll tell you, Martin did not have as long a prime as a lot of people did for whatever reason, and he got into movies, and he kind of doesn't do as much specials anymore.
And I love him. He's like one of my all-time favorites.
He's fucking hilarious. And oh my God, he destroyed the main room at the Comedy Store one night.
Yeah. Just he destroyed
leveled the place, and I had to go on after him.
Because he was just funny.
Yeah.
You know, just to look at him is funny. Yeah. You know what I mean? And he knew it, and he'd play off of it. Yeah. You know, he's one of my favorites.
I mean, I felt like a rank amateur when I had to go on after him.
Yeah,
like,
because
especially
if it's one of those nights in the main room where that guy's audience is there.
And seems like on stage, most people got up and left. It was only like maybe 20% of the people stayed. And even them, I was just like, this.
But he's out there now. He's doing concerts.
Is he doing it again?
Yeah.
He is.
I mean, I don't know how big it is. I don't know, you know, the schedule, but I know he was at the store really working stuff.
That's great. I hope he can bring it back to form the way he was when he was on top of it.
You know what? He's great. He's great in the movies. But I love him. I love Eddie Murphy, you know, as far as, you know, raw comics go. But Martin, I always loved him the best because it was his actions on stage. And he's a guy that knew how to play the stage.
Yeah.
He'd be all over the place. I mean, I loved his first special. You know,
what was your first years at the store? What year was it?
I came out there still. It was the beginning of 79, February 79.
Wow, the fucking 70s. Holy shit. And you guys were living in that house on
Crest
Hill?
Yeah, Crest Hill.
I almost bought that place. Couldn't have a big enough yard for the dogs, though.
There is no yard.
There's no yard.
You just fall off the mountain.
Yeah, but I looked at it. I
lived in that house for 6 years. That house was crazy.
That house has got some fucking history to it.
Yeah.
That's a crazy house. Yeah. That's the only reason why I was thinking about it. I was like, this is just such a historic place.
Everybody, you know, Robin used to come up there all the time.
Yeah.
You know, some of the bigger name, and I wouldn't even talk to these guys. I would never talk to a big name celebrity unless they would talk to me, you know, and because I know what they're thinking the minute you say hello. What movie are you doing and what's my part?
Right.
You know, so I would never bother. Even when Robin would come up to the house, I would like, just stay away, you know. And I mean, great talent, but I wouldn't look to get in his face and go, well, I'm doing this.
Right.
And I used to have to follow him too at the store.
Well, you knew intuitively that it would be annoying as fuck.
Well, you know, that's what gets me when I go there. You know, these guys, you know, they cross the boundary a lot of times.
Yeah.
You know, and then they want, you know, it starts with the pictures and, you know, I'm a comic and, you know, they want to be buddy-buddy, and I can't, you know, I don't work that way.
Yeah, some guy hit me with a fucking sales pitch the other day after a show.
They don't let you come down from the show.
Yeah, but I was taking photos with this whole line of people, and this guy just starts rattling off this sales pitch, and just, I mean, it's going on for like several minutes, and I'm just supposed to listen, and
I just can't
start
and
up
the
and this and that. And after a while, I go, dude, stop. I go, I can't do that. Stop. I don't have any time for anything, and I'm definitely not going to go into business with you. I don't even know you. This is crazy. But the fucking sales pitch was just ready, go. Like, this is his opportunity.
But that's also what you know.
It's misdirected energy.
It's the new generation. See, that's what gets me. Like, you know, when you grow up and all you're doing is looking down at your phone, you know, when it finally you hit that age where you have to start communicating face-to-face with people, they don't know how to do it.
Right.
You got to shake someone's hand that's like shaking a fucking limp fucking dick.
Yep.
You know, they don't even know how to give a firm grip.
Yeah.
You know, what the fuck is that about?
What is that about?
No, but I'm serious. That says something about somebody's character.
Well,
you know, if you can't say, yeah, how you doing? Yeah. You know, and it's like, I'm like, what is that?
It's for a lot of people. It's not good
to
be manly.
No people skills, I'm telling you.
They don't want to be manly. They can't handle it.
It's not about being man. They just don't know how to relate to you unless they're texting to you.
Right.
Or emailing to you. They just don't know how to have conversation.
Yeah.
You know.
There's definitely a lot of that going on. There's a lot of people that are growing up in a society that is more and more encouraging people to control themselves and to calm themselves down and to not have as much fun and to be more conscious of how other people are going to view things.
If a kid has a fucking personality in school, they want to put them on Ritalin.
Yeah,
you know,
it's true.
I mean, it's the crate. They want kids sitting like mute.
And they
want
to pretend that school is interesting. It's not interesting. Like, the whole policy of breaking a child down, getting them to sit in position and absorb information that they don't find attractive. That whole policy is conditioning someone to just listen and be a fucking drone. That's what it is. It's not the best way to learn, by far, by any stretch of the imagination. A best way to learn would be some sort of one-on-one instruction where, you know, you get to explain to them things over and over again, and you get to answer all questions.
But I will say, when we went to school, at least you could have a personality in that classroom.
Yeah.
Today, if you're not just quiet and sitting there, like you're saying... Right. You know, you're not a good student.
Well, that's mad. The quiet and sitting there is the madness.
The ability
to just sit there. I remember when I was a little kid and they would want me to sit down. You'd be all of a sudden like you're listening to something that's not fun at all.
You know what?
After you'd just gotten done running around with your friends.
And I wonder what even goes on now because of the phones and the iPads and all the shit they bring to school now. You know, does that even, you know. Like, do your kids tell you with that stuff?
I'm sure they're listening to music in class with their headphones on.
Yeah, I'm saying, it must drive the teachers fucking berserk.
Yeah, it must. And you know what? This is just, wait till they get those fucking Google glasses. And, you know, they have these glasses that they're coming out with that you wear, and you're seeing things in the glasses, like emails, and you can go to websites. Yeah, it's good, especially the glasses like yours, nice big ones. This is a big-ass screen.
Nobody will see
anything. You can see all your shit up there. You can see all your photos. You can be fucking flipping through them by using your finger in the air. I'm not joking.
No, but it's funny.
It's crazy.
You think you're sitting in class like this.
You
like
will literally, you'll be able to do that and do that in front of your eyes and make the move, and you'll be able to pick ones and stretch them.
Yeah, how are teachers going to deal with that shit?
They're not.
They're going to have rules know, with that shit.
It'll be called a no-touch interface. It'll all be like finger movements. You just be doing things with your finger. It's going to be fucking insane. And that's just the beginning, you know? It's going to keep going further and further until you get something implanted into your fucking eyeball. They have contact lenses, too, now that do it.
That's not for me. I don't believe in contacts. I never did.
But the contact lenses that allow you to see
email and
shit on
them. I just don't believe in contacts.
Not at all?
No.
Nothing? Why?
I just don't believe in them.
But you believe in glasses?
Yeah, definitely.
Have you ever thought, do you have like a LASIK issue? Could you go do that?
No.
I'm just, you wouldn't do it?
I'm just nearsighted.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I try to wear like sunglasses that people could see through, you know, during the, you could see me good, right?
Yeah. So nearsighted means things that are close to you, you have a hard time seeing?
No, things that are like kind of far away.
Oh, so you see things close, fine.
Yeah.
But things that are, I thought that was
Yeah, when you're farsighted, that's where you can't see things right here.
That's me, man.
Yeah.
I'm jacked.
Do you wear glasses?
No, it's not that bad. I mean, I can read my
it's
phone.
It's pretty bad,
shit.
Too.
Is it bad?
But let me ask you,
really
now that you
really
put
bad?
Out
it's way worse
this
than my
special.
Dad.
No, it can't be. Your dad has glasses.
I know, but like he can actually like still look at his phone. If
well,
he has
I can look at my phone. What are you talking about? You're exaggerating.
Yeah,
I
how big's your text?
It's not big. I stopped doing that.
Now that you put out your special, are you going to tour?
I
should
question
you. You're always asking me.
You know what I'm
question.
Doing right now? I'm writing.
I want to see if I'm any good at this podcast.
Writing a gang of new. You totally would be good. That's what I was saying before. You should totally do a podcast.
Because if I get people on I don't like, I'm not going to be nice.
That's good. That's even better.
Yeah.
That's even more fun.
Nah, but I don't want to just shred people.
But you don't have to.
I'll have a podcast on for 3 weeks. People go, you don't want to be on there.
When you and I talk, we don't shred each other. You
know,
yeah,
but we like each other.
Yeah, but I'm saying it wouldn't automatically be you not liking the people. You're assuming that. I don't think it's necessary.
Because I don't get along with a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know what I think would be
And that's
show,
in
right?
real life. That's not on stage.
Well, you and I have always gotten along, and I think a big part of it had to be that I was a huge fan when I was a kid. I remember I was hanging out.
No, but it's like you brought up last time about the first time we talked because, you know, I was starting to know your history a little with the TV show and stuff, and that's why I spoke to you about The Road.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was like, you don't go on The Road?
Yeah.
You have a sitcom on the air. Like, what are you waiting for?
Right.
You know, and that's I think that's when you really started going out there.
Yeah, it was really good advice.
It wasn't
advice.
Course of me, but it was natural.
It was very good advice, and I didn't even think about it. And also, I was just assuming that I would always have a sitcom role, which is really dumb. Because, like, why would you assume that those things never last, you know? And it lasted for 5 years. But once I started going on The Road, that's when my stand-up really got a lot better.
Because the one thing I could tell with you when you're on stage is you love it. See, that's the key. And you never lost that love for it.
It's the most fun thing
I did. Another special.
No, it's fun. It's still fun. It's too fun.
Are you going to tour a lot now with this?
I'm trying to write a lot of new shit right now. So I've got at least 40 new minutes of new stuff and then a gang of stuff in the notebook that I have to
break out. Do you actually sit and write it or you just go on stage?
I do both. I do a lot of making up on stage. There's a lot of shit, like I'll go on
tangents. Yeah, you'll have an idea.
Yeah.
You know.
But there's a lot of it that I actually sit in front of a computer and write. I think to get the best results, I like both. I like actual writing, sitting down writing things out, and then I like performing.
Yeah, my son Max, he loves to write it.
I just think that when you take a lot of time, when you're sitting in front of a computer taking a lot of time, you're going to come up with more possibilities than you will in the moment. You know, like in the moment is great too, but I think it's not an either or thing. I think for comedians, I think it's important to both write, like to sit down and actually work on your shit by yourself, and to do it on stage and just ad lib and fuck around. That's how I have the best results. That's how I always tell you. Like young guys, they say, what should you do? I like to write on stage. I'm like, keep doing that. Definitely keep writing on stage. But you should also write. You should also sit down and write. Because you get the most out of it.
See, I only do it on stage. That's where I'll come up with stuff. Not that I'm a genius with it. You know, it doesn't happen every night.
So you don't ever sit down with like a notebook or anything?
Never.
Wow.
You know, and what I love is, that I finally, to give her a little credit, she doesn't want to be on the air or anything, but she'll tailor the bit. Like if I come up with something and it goes a little too long,
mm-hmm.
she'll explain why it's got to be. She really gets it, and I'll shorten the bit up and I'll be on stage and I'll kill with it. I'll be like, how the fuck does she know? because she wants anything but the limelight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like she just gets it. She'll go, you don't understand. Once you hit this point, you don't have to go further with mm-hmm. it. That's it. That's the joke. End it there. And because of her Latin background, it's like, all right, I'll end it there. But she's normally right 99% of the time. It'll be killer.
It's a funny thing with stand-up comedy. Like, you never know, where the bit's going to go when you first start it. You start adding on to it and
stretching it out. I would never listen to anybody about what I do on stage. Especially a non-comic, and she's not a comedian. It would be like, look, when I'm on stage, do me a favor, stay out of it. I didn't become who I am because I was listening to my girlfriends.
Right.
You know what I mean? But she really gets it, and every time she comes up with something and I do it, it kills.
I know
which angers me.
A lot of comics like to work with people. They like to, I know, Chris Rock, when he would do a special, he would work with a team of guys.
Yeah, well, that's
Voss
a different.
And Nick DiPaolo, and they would come up with the bits and work on them together.
DiPaolo's a good comic.
Yeah,
but I don't think any comic that's a really great comic, and I think DiPaolo's great.
Yeah, he's a great comic.
But I don't think he's going to look to write a better act than he has for somebody else.
It's true.
It's just in your head.
True.
You're not going to. If you come up with something fantastic when you're writing for something, you're going to go, I'm going to put this on the side.
Yeah.
This is for me. I'll give credit. That's why I also believe in being an original. It comes from you.
Yeah, I think that's important. When I hear that a guy had a bunch of writers help him work on a special, it's just.
But that's why you also went nuts with. With the Mencia thing, when he was stealing it,
That guy was...
That's stealing material, but I'm talking about when others are writing it for you.
Yeah.
It's like how... It doesn't feel organic coming
from it. It doesn't, but I don't care. That doesn't bother me. I don't think that a musician should have to sing his own songs that he wrote. I don't think that a comic should have to tell... I think if one of your friends writes a joke for you, you should be able to do it on stage.
You know, Wheels actually comes up with great stuff for me.
Does he really?
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But I feel like...
But he knows me so well... Uh-huh. If I'm doing like a bit on the hairy box, you know what I mean? Versus, the bald monkey, whatever the fuck they want to call it today. I'll just call him up and I'll start coming up with stuff and he'll just add these things. And I go, why don't you do that for you?
Right.
You know what I mean? Because he's such a peculiar character.
He's a very peculiar character.
When he comes up with something for me, I'll just do it and kill with it. It could just be... Well, he did get me banned from one TV show here.
Wheels did?
Because I listened to him. There's something wrong with me.
Wheels tried to tell me that he was
a pool hustler.
He's
you know what he's doing? He's got an entertainment company, Blue Light Entertainment. He's got a catering company.
I heard his food's very good.
It is. That's what's so nuts.
I had some of it at the Comedy Store way back.
The Cannoli Kings.
Yeah.
He'll love that I'm saying this, too. But he really... I went a couple years ago... And I had to do another morning show, and I was getting heavy into the technology stuff about the phones, this and that. So as I'm driving there, he's talking to me. He goes, all I want you to say, if you bring up technology, is that you don't have a BlackBerry and the only thing you want black is laying underneath you and it's got a big fat ass and the only thing you want buried is your face in it. That's your BlackBerry,
So I do it just the way he tells me to do it. And you could feel the air stop. It's 8 in the morning to Los Angeles. So I'm going, yeah, I don't believe in the phone thing. You know, I don't like those blackberries. The only thing I want black is normally underneath me with a big fat ass. And the only thing buried is my face in it. And then it's just quiet in the studio. And you felt it, you know. And, you know, of course, my publicist was told he could never be on the show again. Does he even know
what he's... What the fuck did they think they were going to get? If they're bringing it, it's no, hilarious.
But I was just so into the joke driving there that I didn't think it was that bad. I'm going, well, I'm not cursing, you know.
It's not that bad.
And they, yeah, it's not
if
that
they know
bad.
It's you, but, it's Andrew Dice Clay. What
but
8
in the morning when people are shaving and getting ready for work, you know, and there's a black woman on screen with me right next to me. They're looking like, what the fuck is this? So today when I did this other, you know, Fox News, I was nice.
You worry about them sabotaging you or setting you up or, you know, like ready to
you
go
you know, those kind
you?
Of shows, they're always very cool with me. So I always felt bad about the BlackBerry joke because I wasn't looking to offend anybody. I was just looking to be funny.
Right.
You know, and to me it was a funny joke.
Well, they should,
and Wheels
they
told
understand.
Me to say it, which they should ban him.
They should understand, first of all, that you're a dirty comedian. You've always been.
Yeah, but,
they shouldn't
but
be shocked by that.
But I'm also an adult that shouldn't be listening to my friend, you know, telling me to do this joke on the way to the radio, the TV station.
I don't see it being your fault. I think people are too fucking
I think it's Wheels' fault.
I think. We could blame Wheels you if know. You would like.
But
I would rather blame
funny.
The news people.
He is
I remember
funny.
That time when you were on CNN.
Well, that guy had it coming.
That
guy
was ridiculous, but it was great. That was also a good viral video for you because people, like, it was clear. You know, that it didn't make any sense of this guy was saying that you, like, you ran a gym for a while.
Well, and I just did another CNN thing that'll air on Saturday that actually Alan Duke was the interviewer and Tom Green produced it.
Tom you Green, know? The comedian?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. We did a two-camera shoot for
oh,
this
cool.
interview. Oh, he's great. And I can't believe how his hand, you know me, I'm always doing the filming, mm-hmm. but. And he's holding this heavy camera, and he just becomes a filmmaker at that mm-hmm. point. You know, he's really great. I'm good friends with Tom.
I love Tom Green.
He's phenomenal.
We got to get him back in here, Brian. You
yeah.
talked to him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, me and Tommy G. That's his.
He's a good dude.
That's his tough guy name, Tommy G.
So you guys did another. Who was the guy who did the original interview with you? The one where you yelled
well,
at him?
Well, that guy, you know, the guy that interviewed me was basically saying that guy's like, you know, that was it. You know, that guy made a mistake. He paid the price. And that was it because he is a CNN reporter that had no facts about
yeah.
him.
Yeah, did that? Here it is, right here.
Yeah, that.
Turn this on.
Coming back for a while, you were actually
do,
you
know
running.
I mean?
You were running a gym. Tell us about that.
Running a gym?
Weren't you running
you
a gym
you're
at some point?
Supposed to be a news guy. Where are you getting your
that's
fucking information?
That's our research. You aren't. You
this
aren't.
This is ridiculous. I come on CNN, and the guy don't even know what he's talking about. Go ahead.
You at no point were you running a gym?
No, running a gym. What,
no,
you need a workout or something? Jesus fucking Christ, with these guys. I come on the news for 2 seconds, and you want to say, every
all
time
right.
I do an interview, a guy wants to open his fucking mouth. Can't
all
even
right, Andrew,
do a little
thank
fucking
you very
routine
much.
Here.
That
you know
what?
Go
back.
Fuck yourself. You know what?
All right.
Listen to this.
We'll go back to talking about Art Carney.
Asshole guy.
That's
we'll
my
be back
favorite
in just a moment to fill you in on the Art Carney situation.
Yeah.
Well, that guy's gone. That's it for
yeah,
him.
Yeah,
he's
you know
vanished.
Any career he might have had is over.
Yeah, how could you just ask someone and say that your research shows he owned a gym? There was the internet back then.
Well, you want to know something? What was crazy is, and the guy knew it, that the next night I was at the Beacon Theater and it was oversold. It was
so
gone.
Why
like,
was he trying to pretend that you, you know, that you
know
ran away from stand up and that you weren't doing it and were running a gym? Like, why was he?
The way I would put it, I go, his mommy probably didn't like me, you know, so he was like going to get me for her, this little cocksucker.
Wonder where that you guy know? Is right now. I'd like to Tosh.0 him.
Where he is, he's now delivering yeah. newspapers. That's where he is.
That's go a good Tosh.0 for sure.
That'll be a real good Tosh.0.
Yeah.
Find
what is
that
guy's
is
name?
Now.
I don't even know his name.
I don't know. Are you friends with Tosh?
I don't know him. I don't know him.
He's a good guy.
I watched the show a little
very good guy. Very funny guy, too. But that would be an interesting thing. Yeah, we're going to need to find out Homeboy's name. The internet will tell us. Hey,
yeah.
on Twitter, who's that
yeah,
fucking
Red
guy?
Band.
Who's that
on.
Fucking guy and where is he? All right.
Yeah, what's he doing?
See if we can get him.
Look how focused he is.
Maybe he'll be a good guy to interview, and you could play that.
You have us on together.
Yeah, that would be too intimidating for him.
Give a chance for him to apologize.
Oh, he wouldn't do it. He'd be sad. He'd be sad face.
Well, I forgot how many, but that got millions of hits, that thing.
Oh, I'm sure it did. I watched it at least 20.
You know, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, it was great.
Because you know, when you're doing, especially CNN, which is, you know, aren't they the top news show in the world? How don't you have some facts?
Right.
I mean, you have way more facts than this guy ever had. You know, and you're a comedian.
Well, what he was doing was just sort of judging you as a joke. You know, he was like, well, here we go. We're doing an interview with some, you know, like his thing.
He paid the price.
It wasn't that he was
a little bit about,
diminishing
where
you.
You were a headline guy.
I'm still a headline guy. You know what I mean?
For a while you popped out. Now you're coming back. You were running a gym. Stop. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that I never understood. Running a gym.
Well, everybody wants to think that just you have to have all of your information, you have to have all your ducks in a row and your facts checked to be on television. That's just not the case. Like, you could get on one of those shows and have ridiculous opinions, and then they fucking fire you. I mean, it's happened a million times before.
Well, this guy really paid, I think.
He disappeared.
Yeah.
You know? But he probably sucked anyway. I mean, that was a shitty interview. Like, why would he talk to you like that?
Because he's an asshole. Because he didn't do any fact-checking. Because, like I said, you could tell this isn't a guy that would be into dice.
Well,
you know
not
what
only
I mean?
That, he's also one
but
of
even
those
if
guys.
You're not, don't these guys talk to everybody?
He has that fake way of talking. You know, that sort of fake on-television way of talking.
Oh, and when he came really out, I could tell something was up. Because, you know, I was trying to, like, you know, a little not a pre-interview, but, you know, how you doing, what's going on. Before you sit down and talk.
Right.
And he was, like, ignoring me, you know. And I was actually there with Eleanor and Happy Face.
He was ignoring you because he didn't want to talk to you until
No, there were no cameras on us.
But, I mean, he didn't want to talk to you until the camera's on, maybe.
Yeah. like, how don't you, even when you do a talk show, they come over to you for a few minutes, you know, the host, before you go on. This guy didn't even want to talk. And I wish Eleanor was here to tell the story, because when you're sitting there doing the interview, behind you, you know, it's in New York, and it's just a full floor of people with computers on a desk. So Eleanor said, when you first cursed, she goes, you're talking about a couple hundred people on this floor with computers. Everything stopped, and they all just looked up at their computer. And then it continued, and then everybody, like, leaned forward to go, is this really airing right now? Like, they couldn't believe it was airing. And then we just, like, ran out of there and got in a cab like we just robbed a bank.
Well, CNN is not broadcast television. So CNN is not held to the same restrictions that the FCC imposes on NBC or CBS or ABC. That's a cable. So when you're on cable, you can say shit. We can say whatever you want. It's up to whether or not your advertisers are willing to still support you while you do that.
Uh-huh.
So you weren't breaking any laws. But if you had done that on, like, ABC Nightline News or something like that, then you would have broken a law. And then shit, if they found you, like, that you did it willing, you mean you could slip up. I just fucking got, oh, sorry. You know, you could have one of those situations. But if you clearly, like this fucking asshole over here, and, like, you know, clearly, like, that today, I think, is, like, that's a serious fine. I think that's, like, $250,000, and I think you can.
To the person saying it?
Yeah, you can get in a lot of trouble for that.
I got to remember that. I'm glad I didn't curse.
But the way you did it on CNN.
Peter Arnett, I believe.
That's his name? When you did it on CNN, though, it was like just doing it on HBO. It's like the same thing, really.
This guy probably just sits there all day and go, everybody has seen this. Just everybody has seen this.
Well, another 500,000 are going to see it now.
Yeah, that's for sure.
The silly fuck.
The Rogan podcast.
It's very funny when you have a guy like that. Those guys, they kill me. Those button-up guys. That's not him. That is not the guy.
Definitely not.
That's what he turned into after
He fucking gained 150 pounds, started a slumping.
Fucking jerk off. He's still a jerk off for doing that.
Well, maybe he feels bad and he's not anymore. No? Never forget. Never
think
forget.
He feels bad?
Probably not.
The only thing he regrets is that happened. That's all.
Yeah. Well, unless he evolved. Maybe he went on a mushroom trip somewhere. Maybe he went down to Peru, got his brain cleaned out. It's possible.
I don't like him. I don't want to get a fine.
No. You don't get a fine on the internet. The internet, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
That's why I love this show. It's so relaxed here. Babe, you having a good time here so far? Yeah?
Mrs. Dice Clay.
Mrs. Dice Clay.
In the background.
She doesn't go on the air.
Yeah, it's cool that you guys have this like happy touring thing, too. Like, you guys are happy together in Vegas, having a good time. Like, you bring your family out. You have your kids open for you.
Well, yeah.
Eleanor's your friend. She's there. Like, you have, like, a nice, happy...
Yeah, it's my little group.
Yeah, it's nice.
You know, the sister wives, the whole thing.
I like how you did it in Vegas, too, because I'd always wondered whether or not someone could use Vegas.
I don't even know what that
means. Like a workout room.
No, I love that. But now I'm actually moving to the Hard Rock in Vegas.
But what I meant was, like, I always wondered, like, if you went to Vegas, like, would you have to have the same act over and over again? Or could you use... You're the first guy that I heard of that, like, used Vegas, like you said, like the store. Just go there.
Yeah, but it's a tourist town, so every week you got a different audience, a different convention.
Yeah.
I don't know why you don't do it more.
You're right, I should. I probably should.
So many comics are moving there, living there, you know.
Well, I'm doing it in February. I'm at the Mandalay Bay, the big room. On February 1st, and it's the day before the UFC. It's basically the same. They cut it in half.
You're gonna like that. I've done that room too.
It's where, yeah, but I can't sell that many tickets. So they cut it in half, and then
yeah, but even cut in half is 800. It's 800 seats cut. No. I know the room. I've done it a lot.
No, it's more than that. It's
no, the room is like 1600.
16,000, you mean?
No, 1,600.
Which room are you talking about?
In the Mandalay Bay. They got a big showroom.
Oh, no. They're doing it in the event center. Fights. It's where they have the fights.
Oh, you're doing it in there.
Yeah, they cut off half the room to do the weigh-ins. It's actually not even half the room. It's more like a third of the room.
Uh-huh.
So,
how many
that
seats?
I played, it's like, I think it's like close to 4,000.
Yeah, but, you know, you get a tremendous following.
Yeah. No. It's a great place. But I'm saying that that's what I usually do. I only do like
what would you be happy with 2,000 people showing up for you?
Yeah, we've done that before.
Yeah.
We've done that a couple of times. Yeah. That would be great.
Yeah.
We just want to make sure it's fun.
Alan Chernoff is his name.
Alan Chernoff.
Yeah, here is.
Oh, there's Alan.
There he is.
Alan,
what's he doing today?
He sits. He sits on the board as an advisor for. Hold on, I'll tell you right now. He sits on the board of the Deadline Club. Is a career advisor for Brown University.
Anything but in front of a camera. Yeah.
Wow, that's a strange gig. I hope he's happy.
What's the name again?
Alan, A-L-L-A-N, Chernoff, C-H-E-R-N-O-F-F.
You see, Alan, you never got me down. You never got me down, Alan. I'm still standing, Alan.
Do you know Doug Stanhope is friends with the real Jake LaMotta?
I love Doug Stanhope.
Doug Stanhope lives in Bisbee, Arizona. So does Jake LaMotta. And Jake LaMotta comes over to his house and plays poker.
That's great.
Yeah, there's photos of the two of them together.
But Stanhope himself is hysterical.
Yeah. We did a show at the Wiltern together last Friday.
Uh-huh.
From the End of the Mind calendar show. And it was Stanhope, Diaz, me, and a band. It was really fun. It's pretty crazy.
That's a good show, too.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, it was.
Who was the band?
Honey Honey. They're friends of ours. They've been on the podcast a few times. Really, really talented band. They're like almost like kind of country-ish, kind of like rock-ish country. Like, they play a lot of banjos and shit. The girl has a tremendous voice. Guy's a great songwriter, great musician, really cool people, too. So they opened up the show. They did, like, four songs. Then Diaz went out and laid
Diaz
flat.
Is doing great.
Oh, couldn't be doing better.
Yeah.
He's killing them everywhere.
He's doing a podcast, too, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Church of What's Happening Now. Yeah.
But he's also, I think he might even be there now where I play at the Riv. At the Starlight Theater.
They're talking to him about doing something. I don't know whether or not he's decided whether or not he's going to do it. I think he was trying to make up his mind whether or not he was going to do that or not. But I think it's a great idea for him because it's a quick flight. It's a 40-minute flight. He lives in Burbank.
It's you know what? It's the best gig
right
now in the country for a comic.
You make it sound very appealing. I just – the idea of, like, living in Vegas.
No, but you don't have to live there. You know, you could just go –
You
just drive. See, we drive it all the time. We don't even fly. You know, we'll drive it, you know, and it's become so such a regular drive for us. It doesn't feel like a long time. You know, we do it in 4 hours.
Right.
What's the best tip? Like, what's the best time to go? Do you have any tips to drive?
Oh, when you're driving there?
Yeah.
About anywhere between 12 and 1.
A.M.?
No.
No, in the morning?
Yeah.
Cool.
No, you know, in the afternoon, you fuck.
Afternoon.
You get it wrong twice.
Yeah, so we've
possible.
Come home at night a lot.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get home like 5 in the morning.
Because getting stuck on that drive is the
you know,
worst.
I've been stuck on that drive. I stopped.
No, but I could go when everybody's, you know, at work.
So the going to the Hard Rock, that is it in the new wing? You know, there's all those new...
No. It's right near where the joint is. You know, it's when you first come in, like you go to your right, it's right in that area.
I know exactly where it is. I saw that. There was a band there when I was there.
Yeah, well, that room, the vinyl, is a rock and roll room where they put, like, new rock bands.
That's perfect for you. How many seats is
that? You know, well, it'll seat about 400.
And you do that once a month?
You know, yeah, I'll do it, like, 2 weekends out of the month, you know, 2 4-day weekends.
Wow.
So we spend, like, a week and a half there, and then we come home.
I got to start doing something like that.
I'm trying to do one January 9th. I'm trying to find a room for AVN. I want to do a comedy show there with Sam Tripoli, but I have no idea.
But there were so many you could use the Laugh Factory that Harry Basil just opened there.
Oh, yeah.
There's a Laugh Factory there?
Right in the Tropicana.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it Jamie Masada connected?
Yeah. And it's the Laugh Factory and Harry Basil. You know Harry Basil, right?
No,
he doesn't.
You're not friends with Basil, Tom?
He's not.
Do you know him? You know.
I know he is. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a comic.
I really don't know him.
He actually opened for Rodney for like 20 years. And so they just opened this club maybe, how long ago, Val? About 6 months? It's only open like 6 months.
Oh, yeah. But get in contact with Jamie then.
I hear it's beautiful. I hear it's, you know, it's a good size room. Yeah, and it's doing well. It's kicking ass. And there's a lot of comedy clubs, but that would be one of the best.
Does Vegas have a comedy scene? Do they have open mic nights or anything?
Well, you have a lot of them do, but you got a lot of clubs there now. You know, you got the Brad Garrett Room, you got the Laugh Factory. There's a comedy club right at the Riviera downstairs from the Starlight Theater. There's, you know, it's the Riviera Comedy Club.
Right.
I
did that. Theater.
You know, I know, you know, downtown there's a lot of clubs. I never go downtown, but.
Who books the Riv these days? It's not Steve Schripp anymore.
No, I think.
There's no way he would keep that after The Sopranos.
No, it's just the Riviera books.
For folks who don't know, the big guy in The Sopranos, what was his character in The Sopranos' name?
Bobby.
Bobby. Bobby is Steve Schirripa. We've known Steve, like, forever.
For years.
Before he was ever an actor, he was the guy who ran the Riviera.
You know what? Yeah? I would get crazy with him, too, because I think he's a talented guy and he's really likable. You know, and when he was doing The Sopranos, like, one of the last, I'm like, where's the new show you're going to do? Because even though he played a gangster, he's still this lovable guy. And I'm going,
right.
You got to have an ABC sitcom after this. You're the father of three. It's that simple.
Right.
You know, and I'm still waiting for it because I love that guy.
It's hard for a lot of those guys to transition from a show that's that memorable.
But not all of them. See, a lot of them were real tough guys, like just from real life, guys that have been in jail. You know, some of them were real actors. But Schirripa, even though he was with the gangsters, he still has that likability, you know, that he could have transitioned very easily.
You should try to find out.
He might, you know, he might still. They're airing The Sopranos again.
Are they really?
Yeah.
You should try to find out if you could do it at the Riviera.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Riviera Comedy Club, that's a good spot.
Well, how big a room you want?
I want like 100, like a smaller room, 150.
Riviera Comedy Club, that's easy. I could probably help you with that.
Yeah, what does the Riviera's hold? Does it hold 150, maybe?
Well, the Comedy Club probably holds about 300.
Does it? Okay. And then the place upstairs where you were at?
That holds like 575, something like that.
Was that the place where that Mark Marino used to have, or Frank Marino used to have his drag queen show?
I think so.
Yeah. There's like a
There's a couple theater. It's the only theater I saw in the Riv. There's also a 1,000-seat theater just like that.
And by the way, you got to use up the word drag queen while you can before they decide to
you
tell
can't
you
call them that.
It's too insensitive. You're not supposed to use twink anymore. Do you know that? Even gay guys get in trouble for using the word twink.
I like that. I never heard it till this second.
You never
what
heard
is
of
it?
Twinks? Twink in the gay community, a twink is like a small, hairless, sort of boyish-looking gay boy.
Do you know how
he's
funny
like really
that is?
Feminine.
Do you have any idea why did you have to say that to me?
And then the Andy
I'll be calling
Cohen,
that to people in the audiences. You know, what are you, a twink?
Yeah, exactly. That's the new thing.
Oh, I love that. Cohen. And the big guys are bears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now they just want to be called tings, right?
But Andy Cohen, the guy who runs Bravo, got in trouble. He was forced to apologize for calling someone twinks. He had a, like, he's, and he's gay. He's a gay guy.
And
gay
I love
guy.
His show. I love that guy.
A gay guy had to apologize for using the word twink. I mean, that is goddamn classic.
You can't say
and I love
trannies.
That guy.
Trannies
you know.
Either. Trannies, they don't want to be called trannies anymore.
Oh, well, I used to call them trans testicles.
Trans testicles.
Well, yeah,
that
can't.
Was my joke. I go, you meet the girl of your dreams, right? Like, I would start off, I go, you know, first you got these bisexuals. You know, what does that mean? You either suck dick or you don't suck dick, right? What do you get up in the morning? I got to remember this shit. Hey, you know, flip a coin, heads I want, hair pie, tails, balls across the nose. And then I go, and now you got these other things, these trans testicles. You meet the girl of your dreams, you whiner, you diner, you put your hand up a skirt, you're holding a fucking tree trunk. You know?
This is what the guy said, okay? This is how crazy people are today. Andy Cohen, who's the guy's, I guess he's the head of Bravo, I guess. He's always on those shows. He's always, like, acting as a, you know,
yeah,
a,
we watched
a mediator.
The show.
Well, this is what he wrote on Twitter. No joke, I just walked right into One Direction green room. I guess One Direction is a band. The blonde dude was shirtless, he says, and then his tweet, hashtag holy twink. What? So he's calling the blonde. He said the blonde dude was a twink. He's like, obviously, he's saying he's like a hot little piece of ass. And he had to apologize for that. Misused word earlier. I just meant they're cute. He tried to write that to cover up his tracks.
But that's what we've been talking, even, you know, because we were talking about it with comedy. But think about that.
That's so ridiculous.
Yeah,
what's
like everything you say, now you got to, you know, have an apology ready.
Twink. You know, twink is a
should you call a press conference, get behind a fucking podium, and go, I'm sorry, I called the little hot boy a twink?
Twink is a contentious word and is sometimes seen as a derogatory definition referring to a certain type of homosexual. Thus, Andy experienced crazy Twitter backlash concerning his comment. What a group of cunts we have. We're just a bunch of silly cunts. Just silly, dumb people.
Yeah, now how come people don't get mad at that word anymore?
I don't know. I'm going to use that word till the wheels fall off. I will never give up cunt. I will hold on to cunt. You will pry my dead hands off the word cunt.
You know
who
what?
Who do you have to apologize to? Like, who was
twinks.
That? Like a Bingle?
Twinks. You have to apologize to Twinks. You have to apologize to the fans, I guess, of the band. That's what he had to apologize for using that word. But the people were upset that the word twink was a derogatory term. But it's being used by a gay guy. It's like me calling somebody
a guinea. It's silly. It's stupid.
But
it's
check out those twinkles. Look, I mean, they're so adorable.
Even in the craziest culture, even in the harshest conditions, most of my family's Italian. If I called someone a crazy guinea and you got mad at me, you can go fuck yourself, okay?
Yeah.
That's not racist. It's me. I will tell you, I'm mostly guinea, you know, and that's a source of all sorts of problems with me biologically. And to say that you can't say that, it's fucking stupid. This guy's a gay guy and he's calling someone a twink. If there's wrong with that, there's no hope for the world.
Well, that's what I'm saying. People talk, you know what, everybody, like, you know, we can't have that. It's
can't
just
that.
Fucking stupid
fucking
already.
Stop it already.
You know, you say a little thing, a cute little thing. You know, he was looking at the guy. The guy probably looked. I mean, who dresses better than Andy?
Not only that, it's like.
I mean, he's dressed perfectly. Yeah. Me and my wife watch the show. Well, because we watch all those crazy, you know, housewives. You know, the Miami. You see them?
Right. Yeah. They fight.
They're the only ones worth watching.
They fight.
You know?
Those Cuban bitches, they're tropical. Yeah. They'll
it's
throw
like
blows.
Telemundo that you could understand. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like when we go to Florida, my wife will catch me just watching the Telemundo in all the dressing rooms. You know, now you can at least understand what the fuck they're saying.
It's amazing that just following idiots around with a camera has become awesome entertainment. But it's
sometimes
good.
I could take it, sometimes I can't.
Yeah, this is me too.
You know, because it's, you know, all those shows, it's about the fight now. You know, it's always about the fighting.
You know what I watch, man?
I'd rather see these chicks banging.
All I
know?
Watch these days is Alaska shows. I've been on this crazy Alaska kick for the last couple of months. Because it's like four or five different shows about people trying to survive in Alaska. It's fascinating shit, man. Watching people out there just trying to catch as many salmon as they can freeze because they have to realize that it's going to be winter for 8 months. That's all I've been watching. So I watch that, and then I watch, like, the Real Housewives shows, and they look so stupid because their issues are so small. Like, in the Alaska shows, they're like, I got to go shoot a bear
can't,
today.
You can't compare, you know, real-life shit to, you know, well, you called me name, and, you know, I'm not going to stand for that. And then the one with the boyfriend that just is fucking everything – behind her back, but we love each other. Shut up and fuck somebody else already. Let's start a new storyline here. Why do I got to see 13 episodes of you fighting with a guy that owns nightclubs about other chicks? Didn't you know what you were getting involved in? Didn't you use your fucking head for a split second already?
Yeah, you silly bitch.
You know, that's what goes on with these girls. It's like, just stop. It's not for you. Bang somebody else already.
Well, it's just interesting that that would even be entertaining to people. But you know, it is. That we would
it really is,
because find so much pleasure.
It's almost like seeing two people get out of their cars and start an argument. You're going to watch it.
But when I watch the difference between those shows and these Alaska shows, these subsistence living shows that I watch,
it's fascinating. But how do you even put that with that?
But I do, because it's humans. I'm just watching humans in Alaska live their life, just
like
I'm watching humans
survive.
In Miami live their life. They're looking to survive, too. The problem is, what I think is that all their natural needs have been taken care of, as far as, like, gathering food, having a place, a shelter, being protected from the elements. They don't have to worry about
but
that shit.
But that's interesting to watch.
So, because they don't have to worry about that shit, then they concentrate on, this bitch said something to me, and I'm going to cut her.
Because they're always fucking drunk.
That, too.
Every fucking show, I don't want to get angry over reality shows. But every one of them, you know, well, let's meet for breakfast, and they're opening up Dom.
Right.
You know, why are we drinking at breakfast?
Because you don't have to go collect caribou.
Yeah, and all of them. That's right.
You're
not cutting a hole in the fucking ice.
If you have to go out there and go shoot a bear, otherwise you have no meat in your freezer. That's a completely different situation.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's what it is.
You know, I can't feel bad, you know, for a girl that's living in an 18,000 square foot home. You know, drinking liquor for breakfast, you know, but I could feel bad for the, you know, the little Alaskan guy that might fall through the ice.
I feel like if I had to choose between living with those cunts in Miami or living in Alaska, I would live in Alaska.
I'd have to go with the Miami thing.
I don't think I would be able, if I had to live with them, if you had to live in a house with those people or live in Alaska.
It's still a chick.
They're so dumb. There's so much dumbness. There's so much where you would just like, I'm going to have to hypnotize you people and start from scratch. There's only one way. We're going to have to erase your mind, and I'm going to have to program you. I'm going to get a
you ever watch,
bring ecstasy.
I'll tell you a show you would like, because it reminds me of you, the way they explain everything happening. What is it? I shouldn't have been around there, but I was. What's the name? Valerie.
That
you know,
should be the title of your next album.
I shouldn't be alive.
Yeah, I always forget the exact. She knows. I shouldn't be alive.
Oh.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean?
I shouldn't have been around there, but I was.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have been alive.
They decide, hey, what a beautiful day. I'm going to climb the biggest mountain in the world.
Yeah, whoops.
Thinking, you know, this is going to go off without a hitch.
Well, that guy who had a cut through his fucking arm, the guy who got stuck under that rock, and they made a movie about him.
Cut James Franco movie.
Jesus fucking
No, but
Christ.
Have you watched the show I'm talking about?
Yes. Yeah, I've seen it. Many
yeah,
times.
And they
yeah.
explain things like yeah. you. I always go back to salt. You know.
Salt?
You know, mineral.
Oh, there's a mineral?
Yeah. That lady that's still probably sitting there shaking. You know.
That monster?
I never saw it. I get so mad over
it. The woman's a monster. She was a monster all night. She was a monster in the audience. She was a monster.
Oh, was she?
Oh,
and
yeah.
she was like a middle-aged lady, right?
No. She was like late 30s, overweight, angry.
No, but that's what I'm saying. And you weren't even looking at her, and she was like talking to somebody else about salt, and what'd she call it again?
Oh, no, she was telling everybody how terrible
that salt
isn't
good
for you. And,
he's just sitting, minding his own business, and all of a sudden, the rage. You know, it was like a show off the stage. And he goes, what the fuck are you talking about? What do you know about anything? Like, he knew her. Like, she knows nothing about anything. He goes, it's a fucking mineral.
You tell this story every time you
because
do a podcast
I love,
with her.
Because you didn't see your face. That was the beauty of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and
to
I
me.
Explained to you that cunt had been a problem all night. She'd
I know,
been a nightmare
but I always
all
forget
night.
That part.
Yeah, that part's not as interesting.
You know,
but when she was telling people about salt, but you shouldn't have any salt in your diet, and I was like, it's a central mineral, stupid. Like, what are you talking about?
That's how it started.
Yeah,
and then you got angry.
She threw a cigarette at me.
Then it was Rogan mean.
She
oh, but
me
I wasn't
back.
There
yeah.
for that. I wasn't there.
Yeah,
for
that was when it got.
But you know, my other thing. I know I bring that up all the time, but I like the way you break things down. Is what I'm saying. That's what I was really, like, on the show, like, I shouldn't have been around there, but I was.
Like, they break it down, like, everything that's happening to the person, and I know you really understand those things.
That show's a bad show. That
I'll tell you a thing I like to do on different shows with the same guy, like if it's the same host of a radio show or something. I love to congratulate them on their wife's pregnancy, knowing there is none. You know, and after the second time, the guy would be like, Dice, you said this last time. My wife isn't pregnant. And I go, no, would she have the baby? And he's going, she was never pregnant. We don't even want kids. And they get angry about it. And I'll just stay on it every time I come on. But that's purposely.
Well, you would have these
little things.
I love
to affect people.
These little gags that you would run at the store. We'd have people like acting out certain things. And yeah. You were videotaping it with cameras. So you'd like get off stage and there was like a play going on in the fucking hallway. You're like, what is happening back
here? You got to see those tapes. I'm telling you.
What do you do with all those tapes?
Nothing.
This is what I think the podcast should be.
I just love filming it.
And this is what I think your podcast.
And Tom Green always calls me up. He goes, let's film something. And I'm like, for what? All I do is film. Because he likes doing that shit too, but he'll actually air it somewhere.
He'll put it somewhere.
How awesome would this be if you just had a humongous box of tapes behind you, all random, and each podcast at the beginning, you just grabbed one, put it in, you kind of give like a commentary while it's going on, like, oh, this is from, you know, the Comedy Store. Obviously, let's see what's going on here.
Well, and, you know, well, what I was doing, that's actually funny, but there was sense to those tapes, you know, even though it seemed like when he, because Joe would ask me, he goes, what are you doing with the camera? And I'm like, I'm filming the show. But there was no show. But yet I was making it a show.
Yeah.
And I really just loved it. So when I'd come to the Comedy Store, you know, I'd start kicking weight. And the show is going on in the original room. I used the store as my set. You know, and like the newer comics at the time, like Steve Renazzisi, you know, Ari, Bobby Lee. These were like the new generation of comics coming. So I would film all these guys, and they couldn't wait for me to get there because they never knew what they had to do. And I would tell them exactly what I need them to say, you know. And I would say, all right, you wait 4 seconds, and you say it exact. Like they didn't even have a choice as how to say it as an actor.
But why didn't you do something with it all?
Well, what am I going
to
do?
But it's you spent so much time. We were looking forward to it.
You
like,
have no
like
idea
Ari
how
I... always I'm... like, well, one day Dice is going to release it. And you're like, oh, okay. One day.
Well my son that. Max says, you know, we got to... These are the lost tapes, we got to call them, and start putting things on like YouTube, have them edited into little... Because there were always scenarios going on.
How many hours of footage do you have?
Oh, thousands. Thousands.
That's,
you know,
just madness.
I have this, because I did film a lot of stuff career-wise. That there's this young filmmaker. His name's John Myers, and he's putting together. He's logging all my footage now to make a documentary movie.
That's awesome.
You know, but I filmed all the way back. Like first, it was all the big shows, being on the road, all of it. I'd get my home life. That's how I started with. Practicing just filming myself without a crew.
And the special comes out this Monday night. New Year's Eve is Monday night, right?
Year's Eve.
This Monday night
on Showtime.
What time is it?
10 p.m.
10 p.m. And so it's over at 11. It's a one-hour show?
Yeah.
So set your DVRs if you're not going to be home, if you're out partying, set your DVRs and check it out. That show that I saw in Vegas was fucking awesome.
One of the best comedy shows I've seen in a long time, last 10 years.
Yeah. Thank you, Red Band.
We fucking howled. It was really fun.
No, it was just a fun night with you guys hanging out.
We had a great time. It was old school Dice, and it was Anthony Cumia and Jim Norton and Sam. Yeah. We had a great crew. Bobby Kelly was there, too.
Yeah.
I loved that. Yeah. You made me like love that guy now.
Bobby Kelly?
Yeah. Sweet. I didn't know him up to that point.
He's the best.
You know, and just a nice guy, you know what I mean?
Very, very.
And of course, I had to fuck with him at the beginning when he wanted to. Yeah, can I get a picture? For what?
Yeah.
You know, we don't know each other, Like, why would you want a picture of us, like in a book, And then I took like 20 of them with him,
He loves you. That show was fucking phenomenal. And that's going to be basically the same set as the New Year's?
No, it's more intense than what you saw.
The same material?
Yeah, a lot of the same material.
So it's fucking great, great, great stuff. And it's, like I said, it's old school Dice. It's really like going back to some of your earlier
Well, it's keeping the voice, like they would say, and just, pounding on people.
Aggressive, offensive.
I got pretty aggressive with some guy in the front row that wanted to talk when I'm filming this,
and I had to threaten him, but I left it in, you know, because I know people watching are going to look and go, he's threatening to choke this guy, you know.
It was great stuff. It's great material. And it's even better than that, than the show that I saw in Vegas, it's going to be fucking sick.
Yeah, because I still had months after you were there, so other bits came up.
I appreciate that, man. I really appreciate guys who are disciplined and who really work at stuff and work at putting together a real set, and I know you do. And I love the fact that you're really into doing comedy again. I love the fact that when I talk to you about it, you're all excited about it. You can see it when you're performing.
Yeah, I get pumped up when I'm coming here.
It's very fun. Oh, we get pumped up to have you. Follow Dice on Twitter. It's The Real Dice Clay. One word. The Real Dice Clay on Twitter. Everyone else is a phony. How many phony guys you got on Twitter?
A lot of them. That's why even on my... What's... babe, the new site again? What's it called? Andrew Dice Clay Official.
Is there an AndrewDiceClay.com?
My page. You know...
Is there another AndrewDiceClay.com?
Well, yeah, there's phonies out there. That's what I'm saying. So we have the name. That's why it's Andrew Dice Clay Official.
But AndrewDiceClay.com, do you own that?
Yes.
You have?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, but official. So if they want to go to your website, there you go. Bam. Andrew Dice Clay Official, and it's The Real Andrew, no, The Real Dice Clay. The Real Dice Clay on Twitter.
The Twitter.
And if you can't find it, just go to my Twitter. I just retweeted it, or I just tweeted it out there.
Hey, what's LA Rock's Twitter? Do you know?
LA Rocks the Band.
So yes. Go follow those too, you fucks.
Yeah, see
thank you very much, brother.
Thank
Good
you.
Good luck on New Year's Eve. It's going to be awesome. I
and
can't
let's
wait
all
see
have
it.
A happy new year and Fuck kick yeah. ass in 2013.
Indeed. And I'm so excited to see you out there just fucking
and I'm bringing you
laying,
into
them,
it.
Laying them down again.
That's
beautiful.
It.
All right. Thank you very much, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to Onnit for sponsoring the show. Go to O-N-N-I-T. Use the code name Rogan and save yourself 10% off. Thanks to Death Squad. Go to deathsquad.tv to find future comedy dates. It's linked to pretty much all of us. And then the
Friday
t-shirts.
And Friday,
and then Friday show at the Ice House.
Yeah, it's at 10 o'clock. Tickets are on sale at icehousecomedy.com.
Are you allowed to say Doug Benson's name yet?
No.
Oops.
All right, so Nick Rutherford, Kevin Christie, Tony Hinchcliffe, and we got a couple surprises that...
Couple surprises that may or may not be Doug Benson.
Wait a minute. What do you headline that every Friday?
No. This Friday I'm in Vegas. I'm doing the UFC in Vegas.
But you're always bringing that up. Do you normally do that?
Yeah, we do the Ice House all the time. We
so you got to let me know. You know, when I'm in town, I'll just come do a set.
Come Friday if you want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We do a podcast Friday with Doug
I won't
Benson.
Be there, though.
No, but not even... You go on stage, right?
Yeah, I won't be there this week.
No, not this week. But I'm saying I always hear you bring it up. So
yeah, we do it a lot of times
it.
On weekdays. a lot of Wednesday nights. And stuff like that.
Cool.
But I'll have some other weekends coming up, I think, at the Ice House as well, because I got a few weeks off in January.
I should do a weekend there. I never played it.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
If you ever want to, let me know.
It's a beautiful, beautiful... It's like the Comedy Store without all the cuntiness. Like, everyone's nice there, the owner's sweet, and everybody's, like, really happy to have you there. And the crowds are phenomenal. They're, like, Pasadena's, like, they're not, like, city people. They're, like, a little bit more relaxed. And it's a loose fucking crowd. They're fun. One of my favorite places ever.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, you'd love the shit out of that place. All right, you fuckers. We'll see you next week with guests to be named at a future date. But we got a lot of fun people. We're going to have a good time. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into the podcast. Thanks for all the positive feedback about my comedy special. I appreciate the fuck out of you paying $5 for it. It's a beautiful thing to get so much support and so much love, and we send it right back at you. All right, so go fuck yourself, and we'll see you next week.